Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, welcome to another roundtable edition of Tuesday Night Jaw on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Jim Smallman, and my guests. Before we get into me introducing our guests, quick plugs. Check out everything on the Distraction Pieces Network, for it is awesome. I am one of the people who run Progress Wrestling. So progresswrestling.com for tickets and merchandise, including tickets for our shows Alexandra Palace, when we do Super Strong Style 16, the first bank holiday in May. Our Wembley Arena show on September the 30th, and our shows in New Orleans, Louisiana. Over WrestleMania weekend this week, we have announced that Will Ospreay and Volta will be on both of those shows. So do come along to those. Tickets at progresswrestling.com. You can also watch all of our shows, including our recent unboxing show, which is now up and contains two of the most ridiculous matches in our company's history, at demand-progress.com. And please point people at this podcast. That involves going to my website, jimsmallman.com/TNJ. Just basically point people at that. You can buy merch from there as well. I've got a few t-shirts left, not loads now. And to be honest, I might not order any more. I don't know. I might. I don't know. Who knows? I've got to buy a lawn. Like, I know it's not very rock and roll, but like, either I buy some t-shirts to sell or I buy a lawn for my son to play on. And it's those fine lines. And again, as discussed previously, obviously I've made millions of pounds from the wrestling industry that I've just clearly squandered by placing football accumulator bets every Saturday. That's what I've done with all that masses of money I've made from the incredibly well-paid world of professional wrestling. JimSmallman.com/TNJ. Point people at that. It's got all the ways you can download the podcast. And if you already listen to this podcast, please rate and review and subscribe to it wherever you get podcasts from. It helps stuff out. Today, we are going to be discussing Wrestle Kingdom 12 in the Tokyo Dome, to give it its full title. I don't know if that's his full title. I just like how it always says in the Tokyo Dome after it. Sad it's not in the Egg Dome, which is a better named dome. Correct. Watching this show made me want to go to Japan all the more. I nearly went to this show and then couldn't for various reasons.
Because you were buying a lawn.
Because I was buying a lawn. Not even a real lawn. I want AstroTurf. Because I don't want to have to mow the lawn. And apparently you can Hoover AstroTurf. And I really like the idea of going out there with my little cordless Dyson and just hoovering some AstroTurf. Because that's... I don't like my neighbours and I want to freak them out. They already don't like me, to be honest. I think they look at me and presume I'm on benefits because I'm really tattooed and yeah. I never get to work. I genuinely think, because they've all got all my neighbours, I live on quite a nice little street, all my neighbours have got real jobs, and I think they see me just wandering around in shorts and a t-shirt with my tattoos out with my little son, and they're like, they're never going to work. No, I don't. I'm actually committing wire fraud. I'm not. It's not an admission. Anyway, guests, there's three of us today, including myself. Chris Brooker would be here, but he's had Aussie flu, I think, hasn't he? Which is the rival tag team to Aussie Open. And he's had Aussie flu, which, if you believe the Daily Mail, means he should be dead now.
Yes, he might be.
I checked it out. He's not dead.
That's good.
Get well soon, Chris. I don't know if you listen to these podcasts, but if you are, get well soon. Because he's been very poorly. He's basically been like bedbound for like 4 or 5 days, which... sucks. But get well soon. And thank you for not deciding to do this podcast, even though you're on the recovery, and giving us all Aussie flu and therefore spreading the disease to more Daily Mail readers. We're not Daily Mail readers, but you never know when you might come into contact with one. I would recommend... I do a joke about Daily Mail on stage at the minute, which I think you've heard me do, which is my favourite Daily Mail headline from recently, which they put up for about 3 hours and then took down, which is drinking coffee significantly reduces your chances of death, which is, of course, impossible because you have a 100% chance of death. You know, no one's drinking coffee.
You know when our mutual friend says about, you know, being funny at comedy, because you give people existential dread in your opening line.
I used to do when I was an open spot. Honestly, my 5/10 minute open spots were, there was one joke about dogging, and then the rest of it was about suicide. Like, this is why when my dad goes, "Why can't you write Mrs. Brown's Boys?" This is why.
Just loads of dogging and suicides.
Like, the bits I'm always most proud of in my Edinburgh shows are the bits that make audiences cry. You saw my girls. Like, I was much happier with the touching stuff than I was.
Yeah.
Than I was with laughs.
Yeah.
Laughs are cheap. I don't get a laugh. Can't make everyone cry.
Such an artist.
I'm deep. As my father would say, artist. Piss artist. I don't know what that means. But he's been saying it for years. Anyway, guests. Guest number one, regular guest. The world's thinnest man. That's not true. He's quite thin, though. He's a very thin man. I mean, because you can't eat anything without it reducing you to a small pile of IBS. It's Matt Richards. Hello, Matthew.
Hello. In my experience, it's always a large pile of IBS. Most of it comes out. Yes. Yes.
I feel like, you know, if this was a breakfast radio program, we'd have to go, "This is breakfast radio, so apologies if you are eating right now."
I apologize.
But I find it difficult to listen to podcasts and eat, because if you've got headphones in, the crunchy.
Oh, okay. I was like, what?
Like, yeah, I can't do, I'm a typical man. I can't multitask.
Yeah, I was thinking, like,
I can't eat.
See, I like to have my podcasts when I'm like sat doing admin and stuff like that.
You could have like a protein shake. Some liquefied meal.
I like it, yeah.
It's good. Huel, which John Briley lives off.
Which he's trying to force on me now.
Is he?
I've gone vegetarian. And
you have gone vegetarian, haven't you, to impress a girl like we talked about last week?
It's trying to be.
Is it working?
Yeah. I hate you so, much.
I feel because that bit of abuse towards you got buried at the end of the last podcast, I thought I'd bring it forwards, and I'm very glad.
I'm just terrified about interactions going forward now. I don't know.
With who? Me? Just, or with everyone in the world? Just,
I'm as cocksure and confident as I am, I also...
Have you met you?
Yeah. But no, because, so this is the thing, because me and you know each other so well. I was talking about this to a friend of ours, and I was saying, watch Jim in a conversation one-on-one with a human being. It's the funniest thing in the world ever, because he cannot handle it. It's the same with me. Whereas we can walk out in front of hundreds of people, say loads of stuff and be confident, whatever, but the minute you boil it down to a one-on-one interaction with a human being, we are fundamentally dog shit at human interaction.
Oh yeah, the reason I'm a stand-up comedian is because I'm an awkward weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
And the only place I'm comfortable talking to audience members is at wrestling shows.
Yes.
Where I'm strangely more comfortable.
Yes.
But if you have no concept of wrestling, you come and talk to me at a comedy show. No, I find it really difficult. Especially because most interactions at comedy shows are drunk people coming up, either trying to buy me drinks or saying, "Here's one for you," which actually means I'm about to be racist.
Yes, always, always, absolutely, absolutely. I was at a gig with Chris once when someone came up to him and went, "Here's one for you. It is a little bit racist," and proceeded to tell the most racist joke I have ever heard in my life. Chris held it together quite well. I went, "Oh, yeah. And that was it."
It's because you have to do that thing. It's knowing when you have to, because we'll all internalise that thing of what these people are saying to us is wrong.
Yeah.
But it's that really weird thing of, this person's just trying to be nice. Can I call them out on it?
Yeah.
And for the first 3 or 4 years of me being a comedian, I'd always just be like, and now if someone does it to me, I just walk off while they're still talking.
Yeah.
Because I can't cause too much of a scene for the poor comedy promoter who's decided to book me and all my opinions. But yeah, I just have to just walk away. No one tweets me racist jokes anymore.
Which is probably a good thing.
People used to. When I started stand-up, it would be like Twitter in the early days, mate. It was like the Wild West.
Yeah, true.
How'd they fit it all into the characters?
I mean, back then, I mean, there was a lot of abbreviating.
Yeah.
There was a lot of abbreviating.
People had
just cut all the vowels out of racism.
Tweeted you in Morse code.
Why are they tweeting me a postcode? Oh, no, that's very offensive.
Yeah, all right.
Anyway, guest number two, second time on the podcast because she was here for this podcast this time last year because she is knowledgeable about Japanese wrestling and is awesome. It is Melanie Price. Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. Because you did a great job last time, so it was a no-brainer when I was setting this one up to go, we must ask Mel to do it again.
Oh, well, thank you for having me again.
That's all right. You did great last time. So... let's talk Wrestle Kingdom. I asked for questions last night. A lot of you tweeted questions, as always. If we don't get to your question, apologies. If I have the same question 17 times, I tend to choose the first one I read as the person who gets credited for it. So you know, don't be annoyed if. Read it between the lines. The reason I have to put these things out is because sometimes people get annoyed. About this free podcast that I put out when I don't answer their questions. I'm so sorry, but I get a lot of questions. It's the same as I get a lot of DMs on Twitter, and I tend to answer them probably once every 2 weeks unless it's something really urgent, because I've got hundreds of them and I want to answer everybody, but it sometimes takes a while. So if I take a while to respond to anything, be it a question you've asked for the podcast or whatever, I apologise. But you know, I've got all the stuff on. I'm a busy man.
Busy hoovering your AstroTurf.
Hoover my AstroTurf. See, there's grades of AstroTurf as well. Because we're carpet, right? Which is where you get it from, because technically it's carpet, right? And there's grades. There's like the bottom grade, which is like £2 a square metre.
Hang on. It's technically carpet. Is this like a Jaffa cake? Is technically
like, yeah, you lay it like biscuit. Carpet. How do you think you lay AstroTurf?
No, I know how you lay it. I just wouldn't. I'll go and buy some carpet.
Well, you don't really buy it from a garden centre, because I imagine that's killing their business. So they're not going to...
Good Lord, I didn't think about this. This is...
Right?
Wow.
So, right, so go to a carpet, right? And outside, there'll be like a load of grades of AstroTurf.
Right.
The top, like the most expensive one, honestly, it's like Wembley Stadium.
Okay.
Right? It's unbelievable. You touch it and just go, my God, but it's like £40 a square metre.
Okay.
Right? Buy my T-shirts. My son might be able to play on that, right? And then, but then the lowest grade, right, I don't know, I'm a lot older than both of you, right? But when I was a kid, there was a greengrocer's in the village that I lived in.
Uh-huh.
Right? And all the fruit and veg was stacked on this like really exactly rough, coarse...
Yeah.
Sort of AstroTurf, and that's the cheapest one you can get.
Okay.
I don't want to get the cheapest one because I'm worried he'll get like carpet burns, like he was playing on Luton's pitch in 1988. Right?
Good Lord.
That's a very niche reference for any football fans, or Oldham, or QPR, or most of Scotland now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like the high grade stuff. Oh, it's unbelievable.
Wow.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Can we just sack off Wrestle Kingdom? And
fuck it. Fuck Wrestle Kingdom.
Astro Kingdom.
AstroTurf. I love that Japanese wrestling's always had a weird relationship with sponsors.
Yeah.
This is something I was reading about the other day. So when, obviously, there's always been, since the early 70s, there's always been All Japan and New Japan.
Hmm.
And then there's been various companies split off at various points. Obviously, UWF in the mid-80s. And then in the early 90s, you had a company called Super World of Sports, SWS, that broke away, I want to say from All Japan, but it could have been from New Japan. But they were started, they basically, the big name that they had, and I can't remember who the big name that they had, who they took away, I'm going to look it up now. But they they initially hired this guy as a spokesperson from a glasses company.
Okay.
And then the glasses company went, we really like wrestling, should we do some wrestling? And they set up a wrestling company based on it. I'm going to look it
Why
up.
Not?
Wow. I do love it when you like, because obviously the canvases of all the Japanese rings are always super cool, and they've got like crazy logos and stuff. Yeah. You're like, oh, I don't know if you do it, but like,
it was Tenryu, by the way.
Yeah. I always get bored and then Google what they are, and it's just dead, boring. It's almost like nails or something, do you know what I mean? Or like AstroTurf.
A lot of my old tapes when I was tape trading, they were sponsored by an underwear company.
Yeah.
And I remember it like always used to blow my mind. And I want someone tweet me at Jim Smallman, all the sponsors that are on the canvas.
Yeah.
Obviously, one of them's Tekken 7.
Yeah.
But all the sponsors that are on the canvas for Wrestle Kingdom. Let me know what they all are.
Oh, amazing.
Because I want to know. At Jim Smallman. First person to do it wins some of my AstroTurf. The cut-offs of my AstroTurf when I get AstroTurf.
You should get a sponsored canvas for progress of all the places that you've done either voiceover work for or like commercial work for. So like DraftKings would be like slap bang in the middle.
Screwfix, Volkswagen, Nutella, the Discovery Channel for Alaska Bush people. The Discovery Channel for a shameless cash-in documentary about making a murderer that wasn't making a murderer, but was a cash-in about why making a murderer was wrong. What else have I done? I've done
lines. I just because on commentary I want to go, this main event is presented by Screwfix.
The government help to buy scheme. Which is for people buying new build houses.
See, that's quite a good one.
Which, when we bought our house, which is a new build, they went, are you aware of the government help to buy scheme? And I went, yes, I am, because I did an advert for it where, I don't know if I've told this story before, I went in to do the advert.
Right.
I went in to do the advert, and they went, hi, Jim. And I went, when I arrived at the voiceover studio, which is, I've been to a lot, there's lots of voiceover studios, they're all in Soho in London. And this one's called Jungle, and I've been there loads. And
is it massive?
It's not massive.
Okay.
They do say welcome to the jungle when you go in. We've got fun and games. Like it's where the voices for Hey Dougie, my son's favourite television programme recorded, I found out. But I go in and I know everyone there because I did loads of Screwfix adverts there. So they all know me. And when I walk in, they go, hey Jim, and I went, hi, and they went, listen, you're doing that advert today. And I went, yeah, and they went, it's a bit Toast of London in there. Right. Now, if you've never seen Toast, it's about a guy who does voiceover and he's mental and everyone around him is mental, right? Played by, what's his name?
Matt Berry.
Matt Berry, right? Who has the best voice for voiceover ever.
Correct.
So I go up and normally when you do an advert, there is someone from an advertising company there and there's possibly someone from the company that's hired the advertising company, but not always. And there's a sound engineer.
Mm-hmm.
That's normally it. I walk in and there's like an entourage in there, right? A full entourage of people who work for the government, people who work for the advertising company, like all these people, and they're all smiling. I walk in and I'm like, oh God. And I don't know anyone from the advertising company I've never worked for them before. And I sit in the booth and put my headphones on and they go, and they always ask you to read a script once just so they can get your level and everything. So I read the script once. And they go, that was really good, really nice read, Jim. Can we just ask, you don't sound very much like you're from Yorkshire. And I went, that's because I'm not from Yorkshire. And they went, oh, right, well, we were led to believe that you're from Yorkshire. And I went, who led you to believe that? Because if you go to my voiceover agent's website, it definitely says Leicester born. It doesn't say any other accents I can do, just as East Midlands. And and they go, oh, it's just we were definitely led to believe that you were from Yorkshire. And I went, well, I'm not from Yorkshire. And it's honest conversation they had. Someone from the advertising company said, and everyone in this room, I'm not tarring them all with the same brush. They're all Southerners, every single one of them, right? One of them goes, where are you from then? And I said, well, I'm from Leicester. Genuine quote, isn't Leicester in Yorkshire? To which I replied, no, it's in Leicestershire, hence the name. And from this point onwards, the advert goes massively wrong. Okay? Like, I'm proud of myself. Every Screwfix advert I've done, I've legit done it in the most four takes. Like, if you ring Screwfix now. If you get put on hold, it's my voice, right? Because I once had to ring up Screwfix to order a sledgehammer for Pete Dunne to use. And I was greeted very early on a Sunday morning in Birmingham by my own voice, at which point I fucking freaked the fuck out. Right, I had no idea what was going on. Right, so I sit in this booth and they go, "Well, can you do a Yorkshire accent? Because this advert is specifically for Yorkshire and Humberside." And I went, "Yeah, but it sound like a Monty Python sketch."
Hey, up, girl.
So it was. It's just me adding to the front of a loads of stuff that doesn't do it.
Screws.
Right. So I love the idea that this company just thought all working class people are interchangeable,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah,
right.
Much.
Because this advert is not aimed at rich people. It's aimed at people who want help buying a house, like myself. So I do it, and honestly, I do 30 takes of me in this. Because not only did they ask me to do it in a Yorkshire accent, they asked me at the end, I have to read out a website address. And the website address is helptobuy.gov.uk. Mm-hmm. Say a website address now in your head. That's the tone of voice you say it in. Mm-hmm. You go down at the end of the sentence.
Yeah.
They kept saying to me, it's not jolly enough. Can you try and make it go up at the end? I'm like, you can't read a website address like that. If you listen to the national version of that advert, they got a lady who managed to do it, but it sounds weird. Mm-hmm. Right, and I went, so you want me to put on a fake accent and go up at the end of the sentence?
Got up, UK!
It's impossible, right? It's impossible in my own accent, let alone... And I'm honestly, I'm texting my agent going, "You honestly, I've got a story for you when I come out of here." And all the time I'm thinking, I'm going to get paid the session fee for this, but this is never going to get used in a million years. And it did get used. I listened, weirdly heard it when I was driving through Sheffield one day. And it, I presume, every single person who heard it went, "Why have they got someone who's not from Yorkshire to do this?" Now, at the end of when they're finally happy with it, there's like maybe 10 minutes left in the recording session because you record for you get paid for an hour, so you might as well use you for an hour. And at the end of it, I go, "Listen, while I'm here, if this is a regional advert, why don't I do a few takes in my actual accent?" And then you've got it for the East Midlands if you need it. And they went, "Oh, no, we've already recorded the East Midlands one. We got a guy from Birmingham to do it for us." And I was like, I'm done. Turned the table over, walked out. It's a long story, but it's a story I'm proud of and a story I can't normally start tell on stage. Right, Wrestle Kingdom. I was going to ask you, dear listener, did you enjoy Wrestle Kingdom? Long, wasn't it? I mean, it was long. I started watching this, it feels like, at about 5 o'clock on Sunday.
Yeah.
And finished watching it at about 2 a.m. Admittedly, I did go out to get a Chinese takeaway from a very bizarre but amazing vegan Chinese takeaway that's in the middle of a housing estate in Wrexham. I can't understand, you get it
very particular.
I was talking to Travis Banks about it and he was like, "Oh, that place sounds amazing. Is it in London?" I went, "No, first of all, I don't live in London. And secondly, it's in a housing estate in Wrexham." But rammed, because the food's gorgeous.
It's bizarre.
They did, my wife, who is not vegetarian or vegan, my wife had the vegan sticky beef from there. And she said, "If I could eat this all the time, I'd be a vegan. That's how good it is."
Wow.
While we were doing dietary requirements, no gluten for you, vegan for me, any for you? No.
No. Just run of the mill, me.
Just, you'll eat anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Probably, just to balance things out, we should probably just get you a bacon sandwich on some thick white sliced loaf, isn't it? Just to make both of us suffer.
Mate, we're in Chorlton, not a chance. Have you served on a boat?
What's the worst thing you've ever had? This is the tweet in today. Okay. What's the worst thing you've ever had a dinner served on in a restaurant?
Because
there's this place in Manchester. It's Manchester or Birmingham I read about the other day. It was a steak restaurant that was bringing steaks out on wooden chopping boards.
Oh, yeah.
And people were getting really bad food poisoning.
Because there's something in the wood, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because you can't,
I don't know, actually. I think...
I hate those tiny little chip fryers.
Yeah,
I hate
that word.
Yeah, it's more glasses that they always. Oh, I went for a drink after some food the other night, and it was at the Alchemist, and they served. So they made my cocktail, which was, I think it was Long Island iced tea, maybe something of that. Pretty straightforward, nothing too fancy. They just gave it to me in a test tube with a glass.
What?
So they deconstructed it.
Yeah, so they made it and put it in a test tube. I'm like, there was this genuinely this bit where I just looked at the person I was with and I was like, are they for real? I'm like, alright, okay. So yeah, I think that's the weirdest one.
I don't think I could top that. Living around here, Hipsterville. You're just guaranteed a beer in like a jam jar or something.
Because when we arranged to do this, you realised you lived in the same postcode.
Mate, we have got we've got the most sought after postcode in Manchester.
We have.
Darling.
So that's the thing with me, I live in North Wales, but I've got a Chester postcode just because it helps.
Well, our local football team, the team I go and watch now, is West Didsbury and Chorlton, the full name of it. And they're amazing, they're a wicked club. The reason why I like going to watch them is they've got an LGBT flag, they've got like a refugees welcome flag, they've got loads of
different
nationalities.
It's very much like when I started going to watch Clapton, which is where the Ultras thing came from, yes, with Progress fans.
Exactly, but they also have a flag that always makes me laugh, which is West Didsbury and Chorlton. M21 is ours. I'm like, who's fighting for it? Who is fighting you for this?
Just imagine what the fight would look like.
Oh God, yeah.
Some man with a beard on a penny farthing.
Yes. You over there? I disagree with everything.
It's always the people who actually aren't from here who start this kind of stuff off.
Exactly. Because their rivals are Main Road, who aren't actually based in Main Road. They're based a little bit further up, about 5-10 minutes away from the other ground. And they're called Main Road because they're funded by Manchester City and their academy. But they're their local rivals. And it's quite funny because if you walk from one ground to the other, you see all like the stickers on the lamppost and stuff like that. And it's just, it's adorable. But also, West Didbury did have National Non-League Dog Day. And 27 dogs were in attendance. It was brilliant.
I once went to watch Connors Key Nomads and was made in the League of Wales, which is now the nearest team to where I live, and did not realise until the other day, Drew Parker is from Connors Key.
He is, yeah.
Which blew my mind. I was like, oh, only realised because we asked him where we needed to bill him from on the match graphics, and he replied to the company account, and I saw it and went, what, you're from like 3 miles from where I live? He was like, yeah. So, you know. So you've got a rough area where I live now.
So we're rob me. So we're definitely going to go and watch some Welsh League football then.
Yeah, Welsh League football is amazing.
I mean, TNS win it every year, but
I tried to go to watch the New Saints play. This is why these podcasts are so long. Yeah. Look at this tangent.
Oh my God, I'm
good. just go and do.
So I went to watch I wanted to go and watch the New Saints play a team from Luxembourg in one of the really early qualifying rounds for the Champions League. Yeah. Couldn't fucking get in. Sold out.
There's also a Twitter account
with the new lawn.
With a new lawn. There's a Twitter account called Stand Up for Barry, because it was to do with Barry Town and the ownership of that club. He's a massive wrestling fan, and I'm pretty sure he knows like Mark Andrews and the Welsh lot. And he randomly came to a show in Manchester. So I follow his account because also he used to blog about football. And he dropped me a DM after it and was like, were you Ray Anderson, Future Shock in Manchester? I was like, yeah. We got chatting and he was like, oh, I was there. I was like, what a small world.
I love it when weird small world stuff happens. Mm. Like, it's just, it's quite bizarre. Like, every now and again, I'll get a message from someone that I used to work with. Normally now it's like my kids are into wrestling.
Yeah.
My kids are teenagers and they come to Progress shows and you're the ring announcer. And I'm like, yeah.
I'm corrupted.
I am. I'm teaching them all the swears.
Right, well now our short Welsh Northern football podcast is over.
I love the idea that people have listened to this and gone, they've literally not talked about any fucking wrestling at all yet. And we are 27 minutes into,
I think it's because Brooke is not here.
It's because Brooke is not here to... Because, you know, there's a life outside of wrestling, guys. You know, maybe enjoy it.
AstroTurf.
Whales.
And test tubes.
AstroTurf, eating off of plates. Right. Pre-show, Wrestle Kingdom. Because I didn't watch it live, there was something quite glorious in watching the old Wrestle Kingdoms, in that you'd have like a 5-hour video.
Yeah.
So you'd watch the pre-show, and then you'd have an hour of just the camera just looking at the ring as the seats.
They changed it now because they've got like a little graphic, which is quite helpful because it's all the dates coming up on.
Plus, if you watched it with the English commentary, which I watched it with English commentary because I watched it with my wife, and I said to her, if this is me watching it on my own, I watch it with Japanese commentary because I prefer it.
Yeah.
Even though I like Kevin Kelly a lot, but I
you're allowed to.
I just, it reminds me when I was a kid and I watched tapes from Japan.
You're allowed to say, we should say this early on because I know there was some discussion about it, but whatever you want to watch it for and whatever you want to get out of it, it's absolutely fine. And I completely agree. I think Kevin Kelly and Don Callis are really good at what they do.
Absolutely.
Really good.
And so, yeah, so I watched it with the English commentary, but because I watched it back a few days after the show, they edited it.
All right.
So once the pre-show had finished, you add the opening graphic, and then the show started,
which.
I was, because I was expecting, I'm watching it through a Chromecast, I was expecting to open my laptop, and
shout
out to Claudio for just picking my laptop and just throwing it on the floor during...
Little jerk.
Although he did, I did realise he can count backwards from 3 to 1 and then shout go during a rumble, which is amazing.
If he can change that to go ace, then he's even better.
So, we had the New Japan Rumble, which is always fun. It's a great thing about the New Japan Rumble in that even if you're quite nerdy about wrestling, there is at least one point during the New Japan Rumble where you'll go, who's this?
Yes.
Which is the joy of watching it on English commentary, as you will actually, because there's no graphics.
Yeah,
you
just gotta, that is helpful.
You just got to fucking figure it out. It was won by the 2003 Best of Super Junior winner, Masahito Kakehara, who is probably more well known for sort of shoot style stuff because he had UWF on his trunks, etc. He won. Other competitors included Bushi, Chase Owens, who did at least 17 package pile drivers that the cameraman did not fucking pick up. Cheeseburger, David Finlay, Delirious, Desperado, Gino Gambino / Mr. Juicy.
Mr. Juicy, yeah.
Hiroshi Tenzan, Jushin Thunder Liger. Must quickly point this out. My wife cannot understand why he's called Jushin Thunder Liger and not Justin Thunder Tiger.
Yep.
She got really angry about... She's like, Jushin's not a name. I went, well, it is. It's his name. Mm-hmm. She's like, no, it's Justin Thunder Tiger. It's just been misspelled. I'm like, it's not.
Cool.
It's not like Donkey Kong, which is meant to be called Monkey Kong and then got mistranslated. Or Pac-Man, which is meant to be called Puck-Man and got mistranslated. He's called Justin Thunder Liger. He's not called Justin Thunder Tiger. Any other renames you have for Japanese wrestlers? At Jim Smallman. Katsuya Kitamura, who is... He's the massive one, isn't he?
Yeah.
Massive. Leo Tonga, Manabu Nakanishi, Satoshi Kojima, Taka Michinoku, who looks somehow younger than he did in frozen in time. Tiger Mask, Toa Hanare, Yoshihashi, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, Yuji Nagata, and Yujiro Takahashi, with Peter.
Peter!
Which is his lady.
His lady, because he is...
Tokyo pimp.
He is a Tokyo pimp, yes, and not... in any way offensive gimmick.
Yes.
One thing I've noticed, so there was a few times that when people were getting in the ring on the main show, the camera was literally in their arse, which is the thing they used to do with anyone female. So, for example, Maria Kanellis massively suffered from camera in arse syndrome all the time. Because I love Japan and I'm obsessed with it as a country. I am also aware it's a very, very sexist country.
Do you remember that it was that thing for ages where it was always Liger on commentary and they'd always cut to him while he was just being a pervy old man? I was like, why are you representing this legend in wrestling as this pervy old man? I mean, he might be. But it was just always like, he always managed to be in that match on comms.
Also, you don't ever want any of your heroes to be revealed as being anything other than absolute shining paragons of virtue. It's like this week, we found out that Peter Beardsley might be a racist.
Oh, my God.
That makes me really sad.
Yeah, it does.
You know, and not because, again, you can't be in that position of, well, I'll defend him because I'm a hero. No, if you're a racist, get fucked, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But Peter Beardsley, come on, mate.
Well, at least this Peter
was okay. I mean, she was wearing some clothes, I believe, but like it was the only part of this match. I'm completely fine with my son watching violence, because I'll teach him not to be violent.
Yeah.
Like that's my theory. Like it's lazy parenting to just have a kid, just put a kid in front of a telly. If ever my son's watching telly, I'm sat with him, right? So we're watching wrestling, and he clearly likes it, and he's transfixed by it. It's probably just the bright lights or whatever.
Mm.
But that was the only part of this match where I was a little bit like, I don't really want him watching this because it's seedy I feel WWE's moved on, indie wrestling's moved on massively, and it's New Japan that kind of hasn't with its representation of women, and that makes me a bit sad.
Well, so it's Kakehara the one, wasn't it?
Mm.
And he was wearing his Takayama t-shirt,
which was, I was explaining to my wife, was quite quite a nice thing to do.
Yeah, and I'm led to believe like that's the whole point of him being there, was to raise awareness and stuff for them raising money for his medical bills.
Raised a lot, didn't they?
Big shout out that I think Kevin Kelly mentioned it on commentary, but the Real Hero Archive got a shout out because they raised a hell of a lot of money that I can't remember what the figure is.
It was several thousand dollars.
It was, yeah, and I think they ended up presenting it to Minoru Suzuki while they were over for Wrestle Kingdom. So big shout out to them boys because they are very nice and doing.
I think I retweeted that at least once during the campaign.
Yeah, there's been loads of people, obviously Real donating all the money from his tour he did in Sheffield to the same fund as well. So
it feels really. It's really sad in that there's Takeyama and Shibata obviously and Honma as well.
Yeah.
And it's genuinely sad that the style of wrestling that we all love, and one of the reasons we like watching Japanese wrestling, has caused the end of several careers in the last year.
I think Takeyama is the most shocking because of he literally just gave his body to both MMA and wrestling, and you just have to watch the Don Fry fight.
I was just going
to
bring up the Don Fry
fight, which is iconic, and it's like, it's mad that he got so far into life without a serious injury, and then obviously this happened. But it is really sad, but it's great to see that people have a lot of respect for competitors that are sacrificing themselves for the thing that we love.
Absolutely. I think it was nice that when Kakehara came out, at no point did I think, well, he's winning.
Yeah, that's true.
I wasn't. Although it's a weird one in that the Rumble's kind of it's a perfect sort of pre-show thing, I think.
Yeah,
in that you get it's that thing of it's the big show. How many people can we get on the card?
Yeah,
which is quite a nice thing, and I know that. I look at when we put the Alexandra Palace show together, it's like, we need to have a multi-man on this, get as many people on the show as possible. Because you don't want people missing out.
No.
Who did we think was going to win it?
I watched it live.
I thought Nagata was going to win it.
Kojima.
Yeah.
I was surprised. I mean, it was cool how Kojima and Tenzan got eliminated.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm not going to lie, this was really early and I was quite sleepy, so I didn't really care.
Not cheeseburger.
I mean, yeah, that was wicked. I love cheeseburger. But like I said, I had at least four coffees and I definitely had a nap during one of the matches. I know.
So
I'm old, leave me alone.
I was talking to John and Glenn about this and explaining what the appeal of cheeseburger is and explaining that Japanese wrestling has a history of comedic underdog characters. It doesn't matter if he never wins a match.
Yeah.
He's very much, even though he's not outwardly doing anything comedic in the same way that someone like Santino would do in WWE, he is portrayed in that way.
Mm-hmm.
He's portrayed as being a pookie underdog, someone who's actually trained with them and wants to be good. But he is essentially there as comic relief. That is what he's there for. Have you seen the gif of War Machine killing him with their pop-up power slam?
No.
Oh my god. It's amazing because he's so small compared to those guys.
It's
fantastic. We've been asked one of the questions about this from Stephen Loach is who is in our Legends Rumble? If we were to put this Rumble together with some names, and I feel we can properly random this up. Who are we putting in? Who are we putting in a Rumble?
Trying to think.
What, Japanese?
I think we may as well. I think we should.
Japanese and Brit wrestling. I was like, that's too.
I think we should. I think we should make it. I think we should make it Japanese.
Yeah. Kawada would definitely be in there.
Yep.
Just kicking people in the air dead hard for no reason. It's like, chill out, Kawada. It's the pre-show. And he's like, no.
No.
I'm Dangerous K.
Because that's the thing with this one. Life. There wasn't as many. It feels like the one last year had a lot of, and I don't mean this in a bad way, very old men in it.
Yeah.
Was it Haku was in it last year? Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was Scott Norton in it as well?
Yeah.
Ledge.
Absolutely. Scott Norton.
He'd be a shoo-in. I'd win it. I'd have him winning.
Scott Norton just arm wrestle everybody.
Yeah.
Send Stan Hansen out then.
Yeah, it's. I'd put Terry Funk in his cowboy boots / Air Max. That he was rocking at the Tenryu retirement show.
So, I've met Stan Hansen.
Yes.
I met him at WrestleCon a few years ago. And he... You know, you always read, he's blind.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with him where he was looking the other way. Like,
I feel bad for laughing at that.
So how many we got so far? So we're putting Hansen in it.
Yeah.
To Kawada.
Yeah.
Funk.
Yeah.
That's three. Liga has to go in.
Yeah.
Standard.
I'd put Tenryu in it.
Tenryu.
Yeah.
That's just five.
Can we have dead people?
No, it's got to be. No, we've got to do it. We've got to do it with actual talent now. I think talent is still alive.
Now I feel bad that I'd be dragging Tenryu out of retirement to stick him in a battle royal. He'll love it.
Kobashi, you can go.
Anita.
Kobashi, yeah.
Kobashi, Anita.
Morishima.
Morishima.
Mm.
This is good. Up to eight.
How many are we doing? 20.
Delphin.
El Samurai.
So I can have Super Delphin and you can have El Samurai. Yeah. That's 10. Taka can still go in it.
Yeah, Ledge. Funaki's got to go in it.
Funaki's
in fact, screw
Dick
it.
Togo's got to go in it.
Men's Togo's got to go in it.
So that's 14.
This is way more fun. Sasuke.
Sasuke. That's 15. Dance to the last five.
Because he'd get eliminated with a barrel on his head or something.
Dance to the last five.
Jinsei Shinzaki.
Shinzaki. I feel there's not enough. It's a New Japan thing. There needs to be people who do MMA in it.
Oh God.
Don Fry.
Yeah, why not?
Don Fry.
I'm trying to think of old New Japan boys that are still.
What was the name of the.
Kicking.
The guy who did a bit of MMA. It was a massive draw there. Bob Sapp.
Bob Sapp, yeah.
Bob Sapp. Two left. Bob Sapp's winning this, by the way, guys. Bob Sapp or Don Fry win. See, when we were watching this, my wife actually said, have they actually... There was a couple of times people were eliminated, and she was like, he didn't want to go out. She was like, is this just a shoot? I was like, I don't think so.
Yeah, you want to know who's betting that one?
Original Tiger Mask.
Original Tiger
Mask. Yeah.
Sayama. I don't think you're going to convince him to do it, but
I am.
Also, he's winning.
Yeah.
He's nails, isn't he?
Winners.
Ultimo Dragon because he's still kicking and Minoru Tanaka because he's still going.
Minoru Tanaka, that's our 20.
Yeah,
he's good. That
genuinely watched the match he had at Noah the other month when he's like 47.
Yeah, old is it?
But he's still like ridiculously good.
Make it sound like
Jericho 47
is
the new 30.
True, that is true. That is.
So hang on, 47. So I always work it out by. Like Regal's 10 years older than me, so I always go, and I don't think he looks old.
No.
No.
And it's only sort of, you know, it's only injury stuff that stops him wrestling, isn't it, really? Mm. So, so that's who we'll have on our Legends Rumble, Stephen. Thank you for your question. On to the main show, after the usual fantastic New Japan graphics. A little bit sad this year. There was one Wrestle Kingdom where they just had people just on the streets. Like, I seem to remember like Kota Ibushi like on a beach. I could have just dreamt this. This show was long. Could be dead now. Opening match is now traditional. The opening match is for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship. The Young Bucks winning it for the seventh time, beating Roppongi 3K, who are Sho and Yo. I don't like the fact they've not got last names. Accompanied by Rocky Romero, via submission, which feels like an odd end to the match, but they had already done the Meltzer Driver, so it's acceptable. And they did keep doing sharpshooters and single leg crabs all the way through. I like the fact that Sho and Yo were doing single leg crabs because they're not far removed from being young boys.
That's true.
Which is pretty much the only move you're allowed to do when you're a young boy, isn't it? So I wish we had the young boy system here.
I mean, it's not like you've got a wrestling company where you could create
I've tried.
Wicked. It's like trial match series are absolutely digging, man. Like, I absolutely love them. Obviously, still the greatest trial match series in the world was Michael and Daniel before they became the Florida Brothers in Toramon. And they ended up going on an American excursion and then coming back as the Florida Brothers, coming out to living in America by James Brown.
That's the equivalent of, like, you know, whenever people used to come on excursions, because it used to be that when you were young boy, you come on an excursion to the UK and you'd work for All Star. So, Flying Fuji Yamada, which is Liger, and then
Sammy
had,
Lee,
Sammy Lee, and Quick Kick Lee, as well. Like, so, what are you Japanese martial arts in it?
Yeah,
everyone coming out to kung fu fighting as well.
Yeah, it's like Christ.
Maybe we're fast as lightning. Thoughts on the Young Bucks Roppongi 3K match?
So this is the match I did have a nap in, and it wasn't because
not
it was bad,
you.
But I actually went back and watched it because it was really good.
Good.
Yeah, I really liked it. I really like Sho and Yo. I think they're super cool. Like, it's It's that thing of...
They do look like they're 10 years old.
Yeah, but they're not, like...
I mean, well, no, because if they're allowed a gimmick and stuff now, they're probably 24.
Yeah, no, I think they're, like, mid to late 20s, like, so... Yeah,
they look like kids. That's they and they've got wonderful sparkly ring gear.
They do,
and beautiful hair.
I know they're in chaos, but like I kind of want them and Kushida to be mates. They look like they would hang around talking about Back to the Future. You know what I mean? Like with their haircuts and stuff. But no, it was really good. Like, and it's that thing of I think we all can agree that we kind of brace ourselves for the Young Bucks being in this tag title match. And it being a multi-man or whatever, because yeah. It seems to be the same formula. But they really put a shift in, and it was I really liked this match. It was wicked.
Yeah, I really like the Young Bucks, as I've discussed loads of times on this podcast. I think they're fantastic. If there was ever a chance to have used them in progress in the past, we would have tried to have done it. But unfortunately, that train has sailed. So Austin Powers says, I have a slight issue with them sometimes, and I know it's part of their gimmick, but sometimes looking like they don't take it that seriously. And that, you know, like smiling after they've taken a big move and stuff like that is, and I don't know how you guys feel about that, in that, like, I think they're fantastic workers, and I don't think I've ever watched one of their matches I haven't enjoyed. It's just that little thing of, to me, it takes away a little bit of the intensity of what they're doing, because it does look a little bit like they're having a bit too much of a laugh sometimes. I don't know if that's something you guys pick up on, or if it's just me.
Yeah, I agree with that. But at the same time, at Wrestle Kingdom, I felt like they did take it more serious than normal. And they should, because it's Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
But, the whole no-selling thing is still a question, but I do think they did put a shift in and they put Shonyo over, even though they lost.
I think it was something that you could probably criticise Kenny Omega for at the beginning of his New Japan run, where he was never taking it serious. He always seemed like an over-the-top parody of someone rather than a person, but he only really evolved because he got put into a situation where he was allowed or made to be serious. So maybe that's what the Bucks need. Maybe Roppongi 3K are the perfect team for them, because they've actually got a team that feels like they're going to push them.
Yeah, well, they've also been quite vocal in that New Japan's the only place they're treated as cruiserweights.
Yeah,
and everywhere else they're heavyweight champions. So maybe they act out a little because they want to clear up the card. I don't know.
Yeah.
Act out's a bit strong, but we know.
I mean, so this is the thing I always think about is, I know that in Japan, the whole junior versus heavyweight thing is much more, people are much more bothered about it. From my point of view, and maybe this is because I'm a British wrestling promoter, but the reason that we came up with the Atlas title in Progress was because I know a lot of companies have a cruiserweight title or whatever, but nearly everyone's a cruiserweight.
Yeah.
Like, if you go by the under 205 pounds thing, the vast majority of Progress's roster is under 205 pounds. It was at the time anyway, and that's why we want to do the whole big lads thing. But from my point of view, I don't ever look at it and go, well, someone's a cruiserweight, therefore they can't ever break into that top tier. And obviously, we'll talk about Ibushi and stuff in a bit, but now sort of, well, and Kenny Omega was the junior champion.
Hiroki Goto used to be, when he was a young boy, he was a junior heavyweight.
You can break it eventually, but I don't know if it's as easy for a tag team to sort of break it.
Because
even announced when Beretta came out, they went the newest member of the heavyweight roster.
Yeah.
Because now it's like this big coming out of...
But then you look at teams like Jado and Gedo, they never were heavyweights, but they had a really long, good career there. Mm-hmm. So again, it's that thing of... I mean, I'm biased because I've probably mentioned it before when we spoke about New Japan, but I got into New Japan, or was more going towards New Japan, because of the junior heavyweights.
Yeah.
The reason why I was a big Noah fan was because they presented their junior heavyweights as not just an attraction, but a competitive division. And I think this show, helped to sort of reignite my love for that division, because I think there's more people in that division now that I can really get behind. And it seems like New Japan are thinking that way as well.
You look at how wrestling's positioned in Mexico, though.
Yeah.
Where lightweights are a bigger deal than heavyweights.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, someone like Alberto Del Rio was a heavyweight champion there and was nowhere near as over as someone like Mystico was.
Yeah.
Who was, you know, 50 pounds lighter than him.
Yeah.
I think it's... Weight classes are just something I'm fascinated with because, you know, we're from Britain where when wrestling took off in the 50s, we had 7 weight classes,
yes,
which actually meant that more smaller wrestlers got a chance. If otherwise, it would have just been big lads all the time, wouldn't it? So, yeah, I'm always fascinated by that. I think it was a good match. I mean, let's be honest, a spoiler, there's no such thing as a bad match on this show. There's bits that we're all going to like more than we like other bits, but there's no bad matches. And again, this is a positive podcast. We probably wouldn't harp on about them if they were terrible anyway. but I don't just think it was fun. I don't know. I think it's interesting as well with some of the titles in New Japan never change hands.
Yeah.
Some of the titles change hands. I mean, it's not the 6-man title yet. No. But this title does feel like it changes hands a lot. Because whilst this is the thing I never understand. Young Bucks were going 7 times, and showing off about it. It means you've lost it loads of times. I never get that. It's a weird thing in wrestling. Like, I'm a 16-time world heavyweight champion. That means you've lost 15 times, at least. Yeah. I never get it. It's a weird anomaly in the world of wrestling that I'll never really understand. Speaking of the never openweight 6-man tag team championship, we had a gauntlet match for it, which is similar to what they did last year as well.
Yes.
where Chaos became the new champions. That's the team of Beretta, Tomohiro Ishii, and Toriano, who is my wife's favourite wrestler in the New Japan roster.
Mm. Correct.
Purely because it's weird. She doesn't remember any wrestlers' names with her not being a fan. Unless I say Toriano, and then she just does the shrug, and I'm like, yes, I trained you well. And also, a shout out for his tights.
Yeah.
And with the guy at the school with an Elvis haircut on.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Love him. So, Beretta, Ishii, Yano eventually beats several teams. Bullet Club, which is the team of Bad Luck Fale, Tama Tonga, and Tangaloa, who were the champions going into it. They were the last to be eliminated. The rather awkward team of Michael Elgin and War Machine, because they don't get on. Lots of love to War Machine, who are wonderful, wonderful people having a car journey. I'll tell you that right now. Just, I love those lads. I love Hanson and Rowe. Suzuki Gun, the team of Taichi. Takashi, I always struggle saying Takashi Iizuka, and Zack Sabre Jr. Evil Zack Sabre Jr. wearing black.
Evil.
Zack Sabre Jr. wearing black. Accompanied by El Desperado, Takemichi Noku, and Yoshinobu Kanemaru, and Taguchi Japan, which is a team of Juice Robinson, Raisuke Taguchi, and Togi Makabe. And I enjoyed this mainly because it's a gauntlet match, so there's a lot of shenanigans. I also like the fact that the winner of it was not the last team to come out. in the Chaos were the second team out and survived all the way to the end. I also like the fact that Yano got 2 eliminations by just rolling people up.
Yep.
Fucking love it. Just hitting them in the nuts and rolling them up. There was loads of stupid shenanigans in the match. Iizuka brought the iron glove in. It was cheating left, right and centre. It was just great fun. Just daft. Daft fun. Anything that you guys noticed from it?
No, I just enjoyed it. It was. I think calling it a palate cleanser is harsh, but it was a nice, easy ride.
Yes,
it was like, oh, okay, here we go. This is fun, and that's what it's meant to be. And I love the 6-man titles purely for the random teams that always seem to hold it.
Yeah,
because the team of like Ishii, Yano, and
have they lost
Beretta.
Oh yeah,
they lost it the night. Wasn't it back to Bullet Club as well?
It's. I think someone, it might have been. I forget who it was, but someone put a tweet up about how often it's changed hands.
Yeah.
Basically, every show.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's defended it for more than like.
Well, wasn't the original first holders was like the Briscoes and Yano, wasn't it? And they won it at Wrestle Kingdom and then lost it the night after a new Year Dash. So, like,
It's but hey, again, it got all those extra people on this card.
Yeah.
Oh, I do think after the 8 she's had that. He deserved singles. Yeah. I hate to say that, like, that match is where everyone's thrown in, but there's a few in there that probably should have had. And Yano, it's perfect for him, that kind of stipulation, to mess about, but...
He should be all right.
Big years.
New Japan Cup isn't too far away, so... Yeah.
I think that's the thing, is because everyone signs a contract there, it's not like you can do an indie wrestling. You can treat indie wrestling like territories. So you can rest someone, like with us with Rampage, for example. So we didn't really have much for Rampage for a bit. So instead of just having him just have the odd match, it was more effective to have him vanish for nearly a year and then come back, because everyone's like, yeah, and they're excited to see him again. And if you've seen his match with Flash Morgan Webster from Unboxing, it is fucking ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
There's one gif in particular floating around from it where every single person in BritRest is going, look how good Rampage is. Everyone knew. But with Ishii, I think you can just put him somewhere where he's still around, but he's in the least threatening position possible, and then build him back up again to do something cool. But yeah, you know, you think there's quite a lot of star power in those teams.
Yeah.
There's Ishii in it, Yano's in it. Obviously, Tama Tonga and Tangaloa were tag champions for a long time. War Machine were tag champs. I think having people like Juice Robinson has had a good year. Really good year. And Maccabee's in it as well. Again, a massive star. So it was, you know, there's a lot of star power in it. I do love a six-man tag team championship. I don't think there's ever been a six-man tag team championship anywhere in the world that hasn't just changed hands a lot. Because it's just... Because the NWA used to have one, didn't they? And it used to change hands a lot.
Dragon Gate isn't too bad.
No.
It isn't too bad. No, it's sort of somewhere in between.
Maybe the theory is because there's... Because tag titles change hands more than singles titles do as a rule. So maybe the theory is that because there's more people who can affect the outcome of a match, that it is more believable that it would change hands more often.
Yeah.
Can me justify it. Next up, one of us has issues with this match, is
Jumel.
I'm not setting you up like that. Kota Ibushi defeated Cody, accompanied... Right, so Cody's called Cody and not Cody Rhodes.
Yes.
But the listener I have here, Cody was accompanied by Brandi Rhodes. So was she allowed to be called Brandi Rhodes?
Wasn't the reason why they didn't call him Cody Rhodes when he first came in is because they had Cody Hall there as well.
Maybe.
I feel like that was something. Or maybe he just wanted to be...
I thought this was a cease and desist.
I thought it was cease and desist thing.
Interesting.
Okay. But I suppose she wasn't called Brandi Rhodes though, was she? No. That might be it.
But he's been called Cody Rhodes at Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
My theory on this match was I love Ibushi. I wasn't massively looking forward to this match, then enjoyed this match way more than I expected to enjoy it. But I also know that opinion on this on Tinternet, as I said in that advert I did, is split in the some people really, really like Cody and think he's great. Some people don't get it. Let's present every side of this argument with our opinions. Now, and again, we're a positive podcast, so we're not bad-mouthing anybody. We've got various opinions on it that we will go around the table and discuss. So,
Mal.
Right. Because you talked to me about it, and before we started recording, you went, I've got some theories. I've got some opinions on this. Am I all right to say them? And I'm like, yeah, of course you are, because, you know, there's no... It's all about opinions, so it's completely fine. So, what did you think about this match?
Well, firstly, I want to say that I actually really enjoyed this match. So let's not start on a negative.
Good. Well done.
Absolutely adore Ibushi. Glad he's climbing up the card again.
And they do seem to be trying to position him as a new ace, don't they?
Yeah. I'd like to know his contract situation.
I think he'd probably like to know his contract situation.
Is it cash in hand?
Does he get paid in fireworks?
Is he a plumber?
Yeah. I mean...
By the hour? By the head drops?
Yeah, by the head drops.
I love... At some point when they were working this match out, they went, so I'm going to do a crossroads to you off the apron.
I think someone tweeted it out. They said, you know that's Ibushi. He went, hey, yes. Cody, I've got this idea. And Cody's gone... Are you sure? Like
the other half, when we were watching this, we rewound that spot. Yeah. She was like, there's no way that's safe. And we watched it a couple of times. And she went, no, there is no way that's safe.
Yeah.
No. Anyway, continue, man.
And especially Ibushi's neck problems. Like, come on, lad.
Yeah. But I bet it's him. It's going to be him.
Because
I don't... for whatever criticism you may have of Cody, I don't think he's an unsafe worker. No, you'd never say that. He's probably, arguably, the safest worker on this entire card because of what he was brought up in.
Yes.
You know. Anyway, continue, man.
Oh, I don't really know where to start. Right. Cody in WWE, really liked him. Dashing Cody Rhodes was my boy.
I remember the paper bag gimmick.
Yeah, that was so good. Yeah. And then all the credit in the world for him walking away from a steady job and livelihood. And all his words about it were so inspiring and was really excited to see him. But then this is Cody coming into Ring of Honor and all the Ring of Honor history. His style for me just doesn't match what, you know, the legends of Ring of Honor. Samoa Joe, Danielson, Low-key, Homicide, all them people. But I don't know if that's on purpose or it's because he's a super heel.
You see,
is he doing the straightforward style? Because for heat, I've not worked it out. Maybe I don't watch enough Ring of Honor.
I mean, my opinion on the situation is I don't think Cody's consciously deciding to do one thing or another. I think that the issue is that he's come from an environment where he has always had restraints or formulas or ideas and structure to stick to. And he's coming into a world where creativity is massively praised and encouraged. Mm. And the best matches that Cody Rhodes has had is against individuals that are creative or able to have matches that make it more dynamic. So I don't think it's a conscious decision where Cody Rhodes is coming in going, oh, cheers for all that money, nice one, you know, and then I'm going to jog back off to WWE.
I think he's
learning more than he's teaching, and he's learning that you have to be creative and able to push yourself to a position where you might not be comfortable with. And I think the biggest attribute to independent wrestling at the time now is that the biggest stars are the most creative. You know, The Box, Kenny Omega, Marty, Ibushi, you know, the lists go on and on. Will, Trav, like, you know, all these guys are, they have an element of, ooh, what's going to happen in this this match or this thing. So I do think that he is still learning, and I really do think this is probably the best match he's had, because he had an opponent that not only pushed him in terms of wrestling but actually had a storyline for him, as we saw play out the next day, obviously with the Kenny Omega stuff. So I think that's what he needs. I think he really needs people to work with that are going to go, okay, cool, right, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, but let's try and make something different and create something.
Let's not forget that not every gaijin that wrestles in Japan is Kenny Omega.
Yes.
Or Will Ospreay.
Yes.
Hulk Hogan was brilliant in New Japan in the early 80s. I'm legit not making that up.
No.
He was great. But probably, if you're listening to this podcast now, probably not for your sensibility of wrestling fan was he great. He was a big dude who no-sold a lot of stuff and axe-bombed people.
Yeah.
Right? But he was massively over. Like, even though we now have the legend of Vader in Japan and how great he was, to start with, Vader was just a big dude who no-sold. Mm. He wasn't wrestling amazingly. He wasn't wrestling like Kobashi or Masao or anyone like that. He broke into that sort of style. So this is a sort of a thing me and John were talking about the other day, in that I also believe that New Japan are trying to position themselves as more of a global company. And to do that, they need sports entertainers as well as I could happily watch the 2013 G1 match between Shibata and Ishii until the day I could watch that once a day until the day I die. It's my favourite match. I absolutely adore it. I could watch that constantly. I could watch Omega and Okada from last year every day. I love it, right? But that's not for everybody.
No.
This is something we said on the podcast, I think, last week. If you were to just put on loads of 30-minute long wrestling matches to a mainstream audience, eventually they'll get bored. The thing that takes you from expanding, the reason that there was nearly, I think it was 36,000 people in the Dome this year, which is more than last year, the reason there was that many people there was because of the characters like Cody. Mm. And the characters like Jericho, right? Because Jericho was doing something cool with Omega, I've not seen as many people criticise Jericho as I see criticise Cody. Mm. And yet they're very, very similar wrestlers and very similar personalities. I think it's interesting to see that this is obviously New Japan's doing to want to try and have that sort of person on their roster, because that is the thing that's going to make them a much bigger global brand. But obviously, some wrestling fans are going to go, yeah, but I want more head drops. Don't worry, you still got them in this match.
I think as well, because there wasn't that many single spots up for grabs, people have been harder on Cody for that reason. Like when you think of the people in the Never six man, yeah, could have had a single.
But you certainly can't argue after the year he's had that he's not a draw. Mm. He is. Yeah.
And sells again, tickets. It's that thing of like, we saw where this storyline is now going the following show after. So yeah. I think it absolutely deserved its place on the show, because as well, as I'm sure we'll talk about Dash, but if they are going into this rivalry between Omega and Cody for the leadership of Bullet Club, or for Ibushi's heart, which I want it to definitely be about, that's only going to help Cody connect with a Japanese audience more. And again, like if Cody Rhodes ends up wrestling Kenny Omega, I genuinely think that might be the match where everyone goes, bloody hell, Cody Rhodes is good.
There's going to be that.
Because again, I honestly believe it's that thing of, I think this is a learning experience for him. And how long has he been doing on the indies? What, like over a year?
Well, don't forget, he was never on the indies previous.
Exactly.
Didn't want to be a wrestler. And his dad didn't really want to be a wrestler. And he was at acting school in California and played college football. And then one day he went, like a lot of people seem to do in the family business, just went, fine. Yeah. And had to learn and catch on very quickly. But I think, I was a big fan of him in WWE, I think that the criticism for him is not necessarily warranted. I definitely think his match here was better than his match last year at Wrestle Kingdom, felt really out of place. Yeah. He doesn't. It feels like in a year he's learnt the style a lot better.
Yeah.
I did particularly enjoy the interaction during the match between Ibushi, Cody, and Brandy.
Yeah.
So obviously the plancha to the outside. Yeah. Him landing on her, and then Cody picking her up and properly dropping it like a sack of shit as well. It was just like fucking hell.
Yeah, you do need to utilize her more, because it's a case of sometimes she's valiant, sometimes she goes to the ring with him, then goes backstage. Like, just be constant with what it is.
Yeah,
I know they try to be natural about it, but might as well use it.
We have a question about this match. From Vilinsky Konjic / a very slow Christmas bee. He's given me his current Twitter handle. If we could book a match with the tagline "Handsome Battle" who would it be between? Who's our handsome battle between? The two most handsome people in wrestling. Who are the two most handsome people in wrestling in
the
your
whole
eyes?
Of wrestling?
In all of wrestling,
Randy Orton.
He is
straight in with that one.
He is gorgeous.
Okay.
He's a very oily man, but he's gorgeous.
Match made is like a fatal four-way, guys.
No, it's two. It's just two.
Yeah, so Randy Orton and who his opponent be. Are we allowed to our own matches? Okay, my match would probably be...
Oh, our own, okay.
Yeah, my match would probably be Sonata versus Finn Balor.
I said this all through the show. I kept saying, look, he's a gorgeous man.
He's a handsome man.
My wife's going, your taste in men is terrible. He's gorgeous.
See, so like, I think it's always a battle between Ibushi, Okada, Tanahashi and Sonata. Outside shout to Hiromi Takahashi. He's the one that all the goth kids fancy. So definitely when I was doing art for GCSE in school, I'd be all over Takahashi. But I think Okada's got money, so therefore he's always going to look good.
Takahashi's Gerard Way in wrestling.
Yeah, that's exactly what he is. And then Tanahashi's like Beyonce level of like beautiful. Like he's almost so beautiful that you can't find him attractive.
He's got Beyonce's hair as well.
Yeah, Ibushi appeals to a very particular audience. And then Sonata's like, he's got it all. You know what I mean? He's a little bit metrosexual, but then he's a man's man as well.
You've thought about this longer than this question.
This is pretty much the 9 hours that Wrestle Kingdom was on. Me and Craig just sat there going, Sonata though, he's an handsome
man. Soon as he came on, I nudged my wife, I went, he's a beautiful man. And she went, no. And I went, no, but he is.
Do you remember when Fernando Torres signed for Liverpool? And all the male Liverpool fans went, hey, he's a good looking lad. And all the female Liverpool fans just went, you what? So he's not.
And I did a thing. I don't know if you remember this. I did a thing a few years ago where I got people to vote for their straight men to vote for who they thought the five most attractive men in the world were.
Interesting.
Right, and I got about 200 tweets, and I put them all in a spreadsheet. And I came with the top 10. What do you think number one was? Vote for only by straight men. You had to be a straight man to vote. And then I got my gay friends to put their opinions on it, which I thought were quite interesting.
It'd be like some like Jason Statham or something.
No, nowhere near the top 10.
Oh, interesting.
Beckham?
David Beckham was number one.
Oh, okay.
Do you know why David Beckham was number one?
No.
Because I think straight, especially lads, look at him and go, he's a good-looking bloke, isn't he? He played football, he's a national hero.
Yeah.
That's how lads talk, by the way. That's the voice. Right, and he loves his kids, doesn't he? He's a good lad, right? And he's the least threatening.
Good, right? Yeah.
And what was interesting, I talked to my friend David about this, and David Morgan is a comedian who happens to be gay, and he was saying that, when I gave him the top 10 list, he went, everyone's very safe on there. And he said, everyone's looked at these guys and it's all hero worship. So like footballer wise, the most voted for footballer was Olivier Giroud. Right? Because I think most straight blokes look at him and go, yeah, he's a good looking lad, isn't he? And he's good at football, brilliant. Yeah. And that's why people were voting for people. Weirdly, a footballer that got several votes but is not necessarily the greatest footballer is former Everton and now Sunderland left back Brian Oviedo. Got loads of votes. My handsome battle will be between 2011 CM Punk and Sonata.
Ooh, oh, nice, yeah. Nice. I like eras.
Oh yeah,
actually, do you know who's an outside bet for being an absolute lady killer? Right.
Well done, my mum, for talking there.
Oh, he's a lady killer. 90s Minoru Suzuki.
Oh yeah.
Seriously,
I was watching some of his fights last week. That head of hair,
Pancrase Suzuki. Imagine taking him. Like, fair play to Craig. Craig said it before. Like, one of the lads that runs Tattoo said, he's a man you can take home to your mum, because he's got to look after you. Because who's gonna mess with you if Suzuki's just choking suckers out? And as long as he doesn't smile, he's an handsome bloke. Absolute lady killer.
Do you know who I'd I'd choose as a sort of rugged, he'd look after you kind of guy.
Lance Archer.
So when Lance Archer came on,
when you listen to Keith Urban,
when Lance Archer and Davey Boy Smith were on the screen, my wife went, "Is it the '90s?" I was like, "No, it's not." Why can't I remember his name? I've just had a proper mental block.
Rugged, look after you.
Mustache, grey jumper.
Dan Severin.
That's the one.
Hello, mustache, grey jumper. Mustache, grey jumper. I knew he said Jack Gallagher then.
Dan Severin.
Yeah, he's a lovely man as well.
I've heard that.
Yeah, he's a lovely man.
I've not got an opponent for Randy. Oh gosh.
Randy,
think
come on.
Think of all like a million like road trips I'd have been like, listen to my list of favourite men.
Surely Okada for you.
Okada's like sort of feminine handsome though.
Okay.
He's like showing you a little bit too clean shaven.
See, okay. This is what my wife said about Takahashi, who she'd never watched wrestle before and adored because he's so odd.
He's a little goth.
And she was like, I like him, he's my favourite. She said, but he's very feminine.
Yeah. Also, let's point out that I'm not saying he's an actual goth before I get corrected. It's just a term, you know, that we were using.
You're mislabeling a goth.
Yeah, I'll get called out on it, man.
The problem is,
yeah,
at the age of 30 now, so you can find people your dad's age handsome, or in the 20s, handsome. So
it's like, all right, it
opens up the table.
Interesting. It's true.
I'm going to go for Kenny.
Kenny, nice.
Kenny's adorbs.
Oh, that's a good match.
He's a hero. Really well-mannered. Just, you know. Randy the Hunk.
Randy the Hunk.
Play for my heart, lads.
Good. So there you go, mate. That's
our
answer.
The most intense any who's of in these your, discussions are going to get.
Who's in your handsome battle? At Jim Smallman, hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw.
And you so have I'm to, when you. About this all day.
When you tweet it, you have to write name X name because that's how this was presented.
Got some nice emojis next to it, like the engagement ring one and maybe the bride.
But no aubergines.
No aubergines.
No aubergines, yeah. No. Keep it classy.
Yeah.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Ben, the tag team title match for the IWGP Tag Team Championship between the Unpronounceables and Killer Elite Squad. I can say it now.
I know.
We're never going to do it. It's in joke, isn't it? So the 90s team of Davey Boy Smith Jr. and Lance. Doesn't Davey Boy Smith Jr. look like his dad? I know.
He does.
Like, no. Really looks like his dad. No. When he started, he looked a little bit like his dad, but now he has grown into the spitting image.
He hasn't got the accent, and it always makes me laugh.
He's Canadian, isn't he?
Yeah, really? Yeah. Have you ever watched like the documentaries about the Hart family and whatever? And you've always got like Diane, and he's like, she's always like, oh, he had that beautiful like English charming accent, and then he cuts to him, he's like, all right, pal, test your baby. It's like, that's not charming, it's horrible.
I'm going to win the Rumble because I'm bizarre.
Exactly, it's like, it's horrible. Go on, Sting, let's get to the ring.
It's just like, horrible. I love the idea of them knowing everyone at New Japan knowing their wrestling history, and every time David Hartsmith turns up, them going, not planning on jumping to All Japan today, are we?
How's your leg? God. Yeah.
Because they did do that, didn't they?
They did.
His dad and Dynamite very notoriously jumped from one to the other. I really like Evil and Sonata. Mm. I think they're great. This was probably my least favourite match on the card. It's told a really good story. And again, by saying it's my least favourite match on the card, it's still not a bad match.
No.
It's still... The base level on this show is good.
Yeah.
It's just... I'd already been watching wrestling for a fair bit at this point.
Yeah.
And I was a bit taken out of it. I think the way the match was put together with Evil taking their finish within 5 seconds of the match starting. On one hand, really good storytelling. But from my point of view, as a wrestling promoter, I go, well, clearly they're not winning with that now.
Yeah.
Like, because that's how I always look at it. One thing I'll say, you know when people are making a save in a New Japan match?
Yeah.
So watch me at a Progress show. If you were at a Progress show, watch what I do when there's near falls. I can't watch.
Oh, okay.
So I close my eyes when a ref starts. And it's involuntary. I don't mean to do it, but I close my eyes when a pin's being counted. Because, and I do it even for the final pin, so you can't get a tell out of me whether or not this is going to be the end of the match or not. But I just have this weird thing now where I can't watch just in case someone doesn't kick out. And I was watching this, and the saves were so late, and it felt a couple of times, not necessarily in this match, but just in the, I'm trying to remember a point in general, it felt like the refs were counting slower, or the refs, because they'd seen that whoever was meant to be making the save was a long way away.
Was it not just down to one of the refs being Tiger, and he's a very old man?
No, I don't think it was that. I think it happened with a couple of the different refs as well. Cool. Another little thing I'd like to say, and it became obvious in this match, but then if you go back and watch the whole show, if you work for, as a television product, New Japan, like outside of the wrestling, just as filmed television, it is not as good a product as WWE. Do you know why? Because there was a lot of people's backs. When you're watching the matches, there's a lot of people's backs because they don't work to a hard camera. They're not taught to do it.
Right, so this is the thing that...
And it felt like that they missed a lot of moves. The camera missed a lot of moves. And it felt that there was... This is my only major criticism of Wrestle Kingdom, is it felt they missed a lot of moves. And it felt like... this is the sort of thing that Glenn will thank me for saying. It felt like there was no real direction of where you needed to be facing when you were doing moves and stuff like that. And it's weird as well because it's a baseball stadium, so you've only got fans on three sides really. Yeah, and a lot of the time they were doing moves towards the stage, which is not where the camera is.
I don't know how you guys feel about it, but like, I completely agree with everything you said, but I always feel that New Japan usually nail it and they get really interesting shots. Usually, I don't know if that's because there's a different camera team on some stuff, but
it felt a bit weird. Like, it's the first time I've ever noticed it on a New Japan show, so it could well be that this is a one-off. Mm. But it was the sort of thing that... I need to speak to John about it, because John obviously edits our shows, and it's the sort of thing that you just get used to. Everyone who works for WWE knows to work towards a hard cam, and that's why if you ever go to watch the NXT tapings at Full Sail, it's a bit odd, because where the hard cam is, there's only three rows of seats. Mm. And, you know, the hard cam at Progress shows is normally where the stage is, and people get used to working towards it, and it's a good discipline to have. But these people here have all been wrestling for years, and it felt that they were told the hard cam was in a different place to where it actually was. Because obviously with it being a baseball stadium, they would have the hard, and you could tell sometimes the hard cam shot was very low. So obviously it was in the middle of the baseball field, a bit like when you get to a music festival. You know, there's a sound booth halfway through where the mosh pit is. It felt a little bit like that. Maybe someone who was there, because I know there's a few listeners who went to it. Maybe you could tell us where you thought the hard cam was.
Maybe they just need to stick a carder out early, just because he knows where the hard cam is.
Well, he does
every single time.
Well, earlier on in the show, it did seem like it was a lot more roaming cam, and as it went on.
It felt like I saw a lot of wrestlers' backs, which never normally see. You know, just felt odd. Maybe it's just me. Maybe if you felt you noticed the same thing, Jim Smallman. Anyway, tag match. They did tell a story of it. I felt the match would have been more fun to watch if it was much more 50-50 than the story of they were fucked, you know. The unpronounceables were fucked pretty much from the bell, and it was always from that point on. It was underdog.
I think for me, I accepted this match was going to be my least favorite match before it happened, and I think the fact that they did something different actually probably made me more interested in it. If it was just a bog standard, straightforward tag team match, I probably would have been less interested. But I quite enjoyed what they did with Sonata, beating him down, and then him finally sort of taking the win. Especially with what they're going to do going forward. It was fine, but again, like, Killer Elite Squad are solid, but they're not for me. I love Sonata, I love Evil, obviously, but I thought it was perfectly fine.
Yeah, I think Killer Elite Squad are good. It feels like a bit of a mismatch.
I'm just not. I'll be brutally honest. I'm not really a Suzuki Gun fan, with the exception of Sabre and Monaro, and Taka, but he's not the Taka Michinoku.
I like they'll wear black.
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm a fan of a faction having a colour scheme.
I'm a fan of their tracksuit.
Oh, banging. Any tracksuits are just tip-top in wrestling. They always are.
They go for it. Well, they do seem more of a united group than a lot of them now.
I agree.
But I guess they struggled a little because, was it Lance who broke his ankle? Somebody had an injury.
He was out for like 6 months, wasn't he?
So the others crept on, and then they came back just in the fold. I don't know. It was strange because I was surprised that Evil and Sonata would out and out baby faces pretty much.
Yeah. I quite like that being a wrestler in New Japan is very much like being a student at Hogwarts. in that you do have to have a house. Like, yeah, that has to happen.
Oh my god, let's arrange them in order of what they are.
I don't know enough about
Harry Potter on account of me being a grown up. For me to be able to. Sorry, you're young enough. If you're 30, you're young enough to have read Harry Potter when you were still a teenager, yeah, at least. So, but I've always been a grown up, and Harry Potter's been a thing. And I get really angry when I see grown ups reading it. I'm sorry if you're a Harry Potter fan, but it's one of my pet peeves.
Well, Gryffindor is the top babyface.
Okay.
Stable, and Slytherin is the top heel.
So is Suzuki Gun Slytherin?
Yeah, probably.
I mean, no one...
Bullet Club would have been Slytherin.
But no one's really a heel there, are they?
Not really.
And yes, that's the interesting thing.
Probably a big discussion.
Who's the biggest heel on... Who was the biggest heel on the entire Wrestle Kingdom show?
Minoru Suzuki.
Still gets cheered.
Who starts going like that in the middle?
Yeah. Snops. Still gets cheered. No one acts like a heel. Yeah. Cody's probably the biggest heel.
Fair shout.
Cody's the only one who really acts like one.
Mm. Chris Jericho.
Because even Jericho was still playing up to it. And in some ways, Jericho was justified in everything that he did.
Yeah.
So, you know. Anyway, next match for the Never Open Weight Championship. Hair versus hair and no seconds death match. See, so here's the thing. Normally no gimmick matches in New Japan. This show had two gimmick matches. Hiroki Goto defeated Minoru Suzuki in 18 minutes to take the title. We've got a question from Burak who says, who would we like to see take Suzuki's amazing one-footed dropkick during that match, which is one of the best moments of the entire show. Just take... I like Goto a lot, and his ability to take a kick in is fantastic. Mm-hmm. But that dropkick, oh my god, it was brilliant. I'd like to see now no longer part of the government's advice committee, Toby Young take that dropkick to the face for being a knob.
I'd like to see the guy that from the FCP who ruined net neutrality take that dropkick, and someone make it a gif and post it all over the internet.
Anyone you'd like to see take that dropkick?
Oh, we'll go straight for Theresa May.
Theresa May.
Maybe in the jugular.
Strong and stable.
Bam! Goto and Suzuki. I love this. This was one of my favourite matches on the show.
Mm-hmm.
It was fantastic. I had a few people tweet me saying they didn't really get Suzuki until this match. Because, again, he's a man in his 40s.
Goddamn Tekken final boss.
But he's a Hayashi Mishima. He's a man in his 40s who, you know, he is not as interesting a wrestler as Omega or Ospreay or Okada, if you want moves. In terms of believability and being a horrible old man, he's fantastic. That's his job, and he's fucking brilliant at it. So did you guys enjoy... Did this match live up to what you expected from it?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think the biggest bit of enjoyment that I got out of it was, like, I genuinely didn't know who was going to win. Mm. Like, I realistically could see both winning, which made it really, really fascinating to me. I was like, oh, this is really good.
I think it was good on the English commentary, that they kept explaining the significance of shaving your head in Japan.
Yeah.
Which is... I mean, there's lots of reasons that when I eventually get to Japan, I'm going to be looked down upon. Yes. One is I have a shaved head, and they're going to presume, well, what's he done?
Yeah.
What's he done? And also I'm covered in tattoos, which means I can't stay in quite a lot of hotels. So, I'm fucked. If I cut off a little bit of one of my fingers, I'm definitely not getting anywhere.
Yeah.
/ getting all the respect in the world, depending on your viewpoint. I think you're right. I couldn't really call a winner to this. But saying that, I don't think... There's a lot of matches I think you... It feels like there's less predictability.
Yeah.
Apart from Jericho and Omega, which I never thought Kenny was ever losing. I think there's certainly jeopardy in all of the matches in that you couldn't...
Yeah.
You could go into all of them expecting one or the other to win. Mm. I mean... What do we sort of think's next for both of these guys? I mean, obviously some stuff has been announced, so...
Well, Minoru's been straight to the point, hasn't he? That Tanahashi is his next target.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited for that.
That'll be great, let's be honest.
I just don't get how people don't really understand Suzuki.
But, again, you've been into Japanese wrestling for years. I think
not
for
that long, to be honest.
But I think for people who are coming into this... People are coming to this because they've been caught up in the hype of Wrestle Kingdom, and maybe they've subscribed to New Japan World for this. And they'll see people talking about him and see the fact he's done Rev Pro in this country and Ring of Honor in the States. And people will be like, oh, he must be a mate. And then they watch him and kind of go, oh, he's an old dude with no knee pads on who kicks and chops people.
I feel like I could kind of understand that attitude more towards like a Shibata or someone like that.
Mm.
Because to me, Suzuki is like the complete package. He's an entertainer and he's legit.
Mm.
And he wreaks havoc everywhere.
Yeah. And he is entertaining.
Yeah,
like,
he's
just
so funny.
Yeah.
We'll go to defending the title against Evil, as well as having the title shot with tag team title shot with Okada against Sanada and Evil. So that's good, because he is sort of the not second in command, but the second sort of positioned person in Chaos these days. So yeah,
I mean, Evil's probably second positioned in LIG as well.
It's I always feel it's between him and Sanada, but I think that might shift this year.
I think
Sanada might.
But Evil's got a win over Okada, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So, he's had a wicked year.
Yeah.
But I think this year is going to be Sonata's year, where he sort of edges up.
I don't know. I feel like we've been saying that for ages.
Yeah, but he has got a title shot now, so so he's at least got a title shot. So
I like the idea that that at one point main event in a New Japan show will be Okada and Sonata, both of whom. Tragically wasted by TNA.
Tragically wasted by everyone.
Yeah,
that's to me again of knowing how New Japan tells stories so well. That's what interests me for their storyline is that the two people that were shunned and took alternative routes, and then got told that they're going to be the next generation of stars, and they carry some baggage from that, and I think that's what makes it interesting.
I really want Sonata to just have that come alive moment though in one of his matches.
Yeah, because that's the criticism that's all
that
thrown
is,
at him.
Yeah.
Is he is very emotional.
It is his LIJ character.
Yeah,
I just need that moment.
It's quite nice when you get put in a stable where you can act like that.
Yeah.
And you can get around it. Yeah. I kind of like that. On next to the four-way match, the first ever four-way match for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. Not the first multi-man match, because there has been a three-way in the past between Prince Devitt,
Ibushi
and Loki.
Yeah.
Which was the first time Loki ever dressed as Agent whatever number it is.
Yes, 47.
Thanks. So, Will Ospreay beats Marty Scurll, Hiromu Takahashi and Kushida. Got a fair few questions about this. We'll get to those in a second. I love this match, partly because two of my mates are in it, which makes me inevitably very biased.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was absolutely great fun.
Yeah.
Lasted 21 minutes.
Yeah.
Felt like it lasted 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Even on a long show, seventh on the card,
yeah.
Just felt like it breezed by. I could be wrong. Isn't the IWGP junior title sneaking up the card a little
bit?
Yeah, I thought that.
Yeah,
because it feels like it always used to be third.
It always. I'm sure it always felt like it was heavyweight, intercontinental, never, then tag.
Yeah,
and then it would be sort of a little bit lower down.
Yeah,
but yeah,
but it does feel like it's snuck its way up. The thing about this match is crazy, right? But, right, knowing Will as well as I do, I saw Will take much more ridiculous bumps and stupid stuff in his match with Travis Banks for us four days before. And I'm afterwards saying, I mean, it's not like you've got like Tokyo Dome in like a few days, mate. Maybe take it easy. Never takes it easy, 100% all the time.
Well,
that boy.
You know, you've got the employee loyalty there.
Yeah.
It's nice.
What a comfort.
It's nice. I thought Marty's entrance was really good.
Oh, it's cool.
Cody
really cool.
Shared a picture of Marty assembling his wings into his jacket, which was quite a cool thing to show like, sometimes I think wrestling fans think that wrestlers just go, get told they're doing an entrance, or go.
Yeah.
Whenever someone's had a really impressive entrance for us, it's either, it's been a combination of their idea and ours. And if the ones that really work are the ones where wrestlers have turned up and gone, I'm going to make this amazing.
Yeah.
And that really memorable moment of him coming out on the wings and everything just looked really, really cool.
Yeah.
I thought it was absolutely great. I thought that... the only thing I wanted more out of it, I wanted more Takahashi because I think he's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously he was taken out of the match for a bit by Marty taping him to one of the guardrails. but I just thought it was fantastic fun. So, some questions. A question from Corona says, do we think the first four-way for the title was successful? Was it more successful than having a one-on-one match, do you think?
I don't know if it was more successful, but it was absolutely successful. Like, I loved it. It was fantastic. It was a really good advert of this is how a multi-man can work.
Yep.
But I remember feeling the same way about Ibushi, Key and Devitt at the time, which was I personally would prefer if multi-mans remained special in terms of they only happen when they have to happen. I could live with once a year, I could live with once every 2 years because...
Well, they've always had the success out of the junior tag titles often been defended in movies, hasn't it? Mm. So, you know.
But I think that was a breath of fresh air that this year was straight match. Yeah. What I've had like Roppongi Vice, Red Dragon.
Again, yeah, the Bucks and whoever else was in it. Yeah.
Ricochet and a mate.
Yeah, Ricochet and a mate. Yeah.
Taguchi will pop in.
Yeah.
Do it, but not too often. This made sense because they've all had a strong year. Yeah. They're all strong contenders.
For sure.
And the build for it was quite nice as well, with them all sort of facing off quite a bit in the lead up to it. I do think it was a success. And like, multi-man matches are fun, but you're right. You can't do them too often because people end up getting burnt out by them. Like, certainly when we're putting shows together for Progress, it's like sometimes you like to do them because you want to get people on a card or whatever. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can do them to protect someone or whatever. But I just think it's that thing of the thing that pleased me the most was the fact that Will actually beat Marty.
Mm-hmm.
If it had been a way of getting the title off Marty without Marty having to take the defeat, I would have felt it less successful. I feel that told the story between those guys that it needed to tell. But they kept saying on commentary that obviously all around the world, Marty always beats Will. Shout out to Kevin Kelly, who didn't do it on this show, but has done in the past, bought Progress All, which is really nice because we have absolutely no relationship with New Japan. So it's nice to acknowledge it. And he was acknowledging other companies like PWG all through the show as well. Again, companies that don't have a relationship with New Japan. It's nice, you know, because obviously companies like RevPro do and Ring of Honor do, and it's nice that they get bought up, but it's nice when other companies that don't get bought up as well.
I wonder why they hot potato that belt. Like, I would say some belts are really... Because that is a prestigious belt.
Isn't Will like the 80th champion now?
Yeah, something like that.
And considering that title's not been around for that long compared to the main title as well. I think it's... You want to, as a promoter, sometimes you want to give people title changes. And I suppose that New Japan's hierarchy must just look at it and go, well, what title is... It's probably to do with prestige. Mm-hmm. You look at how long Okada's been champion for now. Mm-hmm. And I suppose that's probably just the theory behind it, is it's just down to the prestige of it. It's not as prestigious as the main title or the Intercontinental.
And maybe they wanted to have his own identity. I mean, when they were... changing it between Kushida and Takahashi when Takahashi sort of came in or re-debuted or whatever you want to call it, like, that made sense because it was so unpredictable, like, because of Takahashi's character. And I do think it gives a different distinction from the heavyweight title because of the style of matches, because it's meant to be high risk, so it's like, is that risk going to pay off?
Anything can happen, kind of thing.
A question from Shane Kiley is, do you think we'll ever see a multi-man for the other titles?
I
mean, well, if this one's a success
and
reaction to it is good, then it might not happen soon, but we could.
Possibly. I, 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 my brain can't even comprehend an IWGP. I don't think it
fits in with the New Japan style to have the heavyweight titles contested in that way because of the slow build the title matches
tend to be. But then, if you think about it, in recent times we've had a ladder match.
Yeah.
You know, we've had a hair versus hair match. You know what I mean? There's been more gimmicky matches creeping in, so I don't think it's a never.
Well, the natural thing would be Omega, Okada, Naito, just because of the three everyone talks about.
Yeah.
But I can't see it. I can at some point, but not anytime soon.
I think as well there is that tradition of if you, it's that very Japanese thing of if you lose. Not the sort of passing of the torch or anything like that, but if you lose, is that respect of you've been beaten by a better man.
Yes.
And if there's three or four people in it,
yes,
there's a muddying of the waters between the victor and the person defeated, which I think is probably why they went with Marty being the one who was actually beaten by Will in this multi-man. Yeah. And Jamie says, with Will and Marty in this match, who is next from the United Kingdom to make it big in New Japan? Bearing in mind, I've not, because I knew when Will and Marty and that, I knew when they were all going there because they told me. I'm not aware of anyone else going to New Japan in the near future. I'm fairly certain that anyone with a WWE UK contract can't go there because Pete Dunne would be wonderful there.
Yes.
But I don't think he can go there. I could be wrong, but I don't think he can. I don't know. Who would we see making it out of there?
I mean, Travis Banks is obviously an immediate one.
And again, loves it, has trained in Japan as well.
I mean, again, Chris has said it before, but a kind of off-centre one might be Zach Gibson.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
Because I think he
smash it.
Oh, and obviously he's been having a lot of matches in Rev Pro against people like Nagata, Koto and stuff.
Maybe not New Japan, initially to start with. Pastor William Eva.
Interesting.
Because I think, and I know he loves Japanese wrestling as well, and obsessed with people like Bruiser Brody and people like, as is Rampage Brown, is also obsessed with Bruiser Brody. But imagine putting Pastor and Rampage in a tag team together and putting them in New Japan. And letting them behave like Brody used to behave. Because I just love the idea of just pile drivers and lariats everywhere.
Yeah, I like it.
Right, and it's a bit of left of centre one, but I know how much they'd love doing it.
Yeah, it'd be really, really cool. I'm down with that.
Super Junior, maybe Bubblegum, something like that.
Ooh, nice. Like it.
It'd be nice if more people did get a chance to be in Super Junior. From this neck of the woods, as it were. Trying to think of else. I know people like Lycos would love to do Dragon Gate and stuff like that, and that'd be sweet. So yeah, there are answers. On next to the IWGP Intercontinental Championship, where Hiroshi Tanahashi beats Jay White. Jay Switchblade White. Now, I'm going to give you someone's opinion. Stephen Jones sent me his opinion going, I thought Jay White was great. Now, while the show was going on, so I had the show spoiled for me massively because I went on the internet. Mm. I couldn't watch it when it was on. And I noticed a lot of people going, maybe give Jay White a chance, right? And in my head I was like, oh, so obviously this whole gimmick hasn't been as impressive. First thing my wife said was, why is Trent Reznor in a wrestling match? Because he did look like Trent Reznor. Now, in a new badly, if we're honest, it wasn't necessarily the most interesting match in the world.
No.
I will also be honest and say, I don't find Tanahashi matches that interesting.
No, you said before.
And like, I know he's great, and I know in the right environment he's in absolutely blinding matches. I know that, but he doesn't do, in the same way AJ Styles did, do loads for me for years, and it's only been recently my brain's gone, oh, actually, you really like him. Mm. And I know Tanahashi's great, and I'm not saying he's not great, he's just not for me. So from my point of view, I think I wanted to see a little bit more sort of character-y stuff from Jay to sort of make this match more memorable for me. And I was surprised that they spent all this time and energy building him up and he just kind of got beat. And admittedly, it's a 20-minute long match, but he just kind of got beat, which felt a bit weird. Mm. Which is a question from Connor Pape, says, do we feel that White got beat too easily after the big build-up? I would say, Connor, that Japan's different to America in that you can be built up and still lose your first match. It doesn't matter as much there. But how do we feel about the whole Switchblade
thing? I think everyone's pretty much made a good point about how Kenny's cleaner gimmick didn't really pop at the beginning, and now he's evolved into something interesting. And I think the show the day after on Dash definitely gave a better account of Jay White's character as well as the match that he had. In terms of losing too easily, he did wrestle arguably one of the greatest IWGP heavyweight champions of modern history, a man that almost single-handedly dragged that company through hard times. So I don't think the loss to Tanahashi hurts him, because it's Tanahashi, but yeah, it didn't seem to... I don't think there was anything wrong with the match. I don't think there's anything wrong with the gimmick. It just didn't click. There wasn't that.
I think it lacked a little aggression for me.
Fair, okay.
Also,
I'd agree with that. It did need to be more aggressive.
His match the next day, I think, was a lot more grr. But also, I think he was a victim. Like, you've got to remember, he made his return on the same show that Jericho's video came on the screen. Mm-hmm. So, you mean... That was a forgettable moment.
But also, that's kind of bad planning.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to overload people with surprises.
Yeah.
Because, I think it's a difficult one, really, because it feels, again, like a much more Western gimmick than New Japan would normally do. And I know that is, technically speaking, because with Jay being from New Zealand, he's not a Westerner, because it's pretty much the same. But you know what I mean? Like, he's... it is a much more Western gimmick to do that. And again, whether or not that's something that they're thinking of to try and globalise the brand a little bit more. And because it's not quite sports entertainment, because as a rule, you know, WWE won't have a guy playing with a knife in promos
That's true.
But it does make him more defined. And again, it's that thing of taking him from being a young boy to having, and presumably they'll do the same with David Finlay at some point in the future.
I'm really interested to see what he does, because obviously on Dash he turned down joining Bullet Club, and apparently he's joined Chaos,
which they did off camera. Someone tweeted me and said, "I do stuff off camera."
I don't think he's joined Chaos. I think he's going to turn on Show and Yo. I don't think he's going to join a faction.
It wouldn't really make sense,
because he's only been advertised one match on the tour coming up, and it's that match with Sho and Yo against, I think it's Los Ingobernables, I think. If they do that with him and have him being the outcast, then I think that would help him going forward. I don't think it's going to hamper him going forward if he's in Chaos. I really don't, or if he's wherever he is, but I like the idea of him just being the guy that no one likes.
Yeah.
They did it with Naito a little bit when he first came back, if you remember.
His gimmick's not a million miles away from Undertaker-esque in some ways. And if they make him a bit of a loner, it could actually make him...
Yeah.
It makes him interesting.
It does.
If we've pointed out, if everyone's in a house, like Hogwarts, if he's the one person who's not in a house, I don't know if there's a Hogwarts reference here that we can use. I'm looking at Mel. is there anyone in the Harry Potter books who's not associated with a house?
But if you think about it as well, it's like if he's trying to kill the Bullet Club, which is the suggestion that it is, then it's understandable that he would use Chaos to achieve that. But does that make him part of Chaos? Like, this is the thing,
it's
like, this is what I mean, his character has got the potential to be really different, like really different. And even if they do go a little bit more conventional with it, I still think he's going to be allowed to grow in that time. And I'm really looking forward to what happens with him. Like,
I mean, he's had one or two matches back, and literally he's gone this much discussion.
Yeah, so exactly.
He must be doing something right.
Yeah, exactly. And again, not everything catches on straight away.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's a sign, and I'll get to this at the end, that people's expectations are sometimes so high that there is nothing you can do to avoid disappointment.
Yeah.
You can ruin it for yourself.
And this show is a prime example of that in some ways. Next up, first of the two main events, which was Kenny Omega defending his IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship in a no disqualification match against Chris Jericho. Now, this match was long. I have a theory on no disqualification matches, they shouldn't last long because you're hitting each other with weapons. So for me, this match should not have lasted 34 minutes. It should have lasted at most 20. Especially with what followed it, because it just it's the life out of me as a viewer a little bit because it lasted too long. Sure. I love Kenny. I also love Chris Jericho. Jericho is one of my favourite wrestlers of one generation, and Omega is one of my favourite matches of this generation. I thought Jericho really bought his working boots to this for someone who, like we said before, is what, 47 now?
Yeah.
You know, worked his arse off. The whole setup to it was brilliant. But I do feel that there was too long a sort of feeling out process and messing around at the start of it that it could have, it could, to me, the men are really, the way they built the hatred of each other was really good, and they could have, made it, they could have condensed this match a little bit and made it much more intense for me, to make it really stand out a little bit more. As it felt, a little bit sort of WWE Attitude Era main event style, in that it's like, well, the table's probably going to get destroyed at some point, and we're gonna wander around ringside a little bit and stuff like that. Also, from a refereeing point of view in this, sometimes was doing rope breaks, sometimes wasn't doing rope breaks, sometimes was counting them out, sometimes wasn't counting them out, and it's like, you'd think they would have sussed that out.
Yeah.
For me personally. What did you guys think of? I didn't enjoy this match.
Yeah.
I really did enjoy it. I just, maybe with promoter's head on, it didn't need to be as long as it was. But I don't know how you guys feel.
I really enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed it. I think it lived up to the hype. I don't think it really needed to be no DQ. Because Kenny finds his way through tables in straight-up matches at the best of times.
That is a good point. That is a good
but
point.
But to build to the, this is a one-off, never going to happen again, I see why they've done it.
And it did build, you're right about it living up to the hype. Yeah. It did. It really did live up to the hype. It's just, you know, I'm probably a bit nitpicky.
It's great. Just back off the year that Jericho's had in WWE. The year Kenny's had. It's an absolute dream match.
See, I love that people have instantly gone, oh, no, Jericho probably burnt his bridge with WWE. The 2 days after that match was announced, Vince had tweeted him, happy birthday.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's this mythical war between two companies who are on opposite sides of the globe as much as wrestling fans always want to find a prime example is for a long time people wanting Progress and ICW to not get on.
Yeah,
Mark's been on this podcast literally from my point of view as a wrestling promoter, and John and Glenn will back me up on this, I want to try and get on well with everybody.
Yeah,
because you never know when you're going to do a flight share with a print import. Like, that's what's the point of pissing people off? And I think it's the same in the big leagues as well. Like, there's no real need. It's not the Monday Night Wars, because we've been so conditioned to the Monday Night Wars. And two people in Vince and Ted Turner legit hating each other. I think we've all been conditioned to presume there's a rival when there's not.
Yeah, and I would say I listened to the Talk of Jericho a couple of days after, and that's all about how the match came about and what Vince said and everything. It's really, really insightful. So,
I presume Don Callis was involved a little bit, because he's from Winnipeg as well.
It was his brainchild.
So
Kenny got him the commentary job. So in turn, he's thinking all these different ways of how he can help Kenny out and keep unique.
How did you feel about it?
I really enjoyed it. I think for me it was really important for Jericho to have this match. I think it just helps his legacy. Like, I think it's such a good way of making people remember him.
Yeah.
If does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, instead of sort of winding his time down with WWE, and like, his WWE stuff's been fantastic. The whole Kevin Owens feud and all the list and stuff was great, but
it's not like he's not got a great canon of work.
No, absolutely. But it's that thing of, like, you know, you're only as good as your last match in people's memories, right? So if this is one of his swan songs, then it's an absolutely fantastic match.
Yeah. Big shout out to the point where he set a table up, looked at Chono, went, "This is for you, Chono."
Yeah,
in a callback to something they did in the Dome years ago, wasn't it? So, a couple of questions about this match.
Mm-hmm.
One from TD, which was, now blood was allowed in this match, and obviously they Kenny was allowed to blade off of the codebreaker he took when the angle was first set up. Which is unusual because New Japan has a no-blading policy, as most wrestling companies tend to have. So TD said, did we notice the blading incident? Now, because I clearly didn't, because I don't know what you're referring to. So did we notice the blading incident in this match?
I didn't, because I made a coffee at that point.
Matt! What the hell? The biggest banner match of the last few months.
Like Jim said, though, this match was very long and I was waiting for the main event.
So versus Omega.
I thought, I'll go and make a brew. And then my housemate...
I'm really mad at you.
...was laughing. my housemate was laughing because he was like, oh, it's the worst blade job passing of thing.
So what happened?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not too sure. I believe it was the passing of the... The object that he used, the blade, that was just really obvious.
Yeah, with red shoes.
Oh, okay. Oh, there you go. Say no more. Red shoes.
I should have rewatched it. But yeah, there was an incident of passing it around, and then there was an incident of Kenny not quite managing to cut himself, I think is the gist of it, and it went on for a while. But the only reason I think we were expecting it is because of the segments leading up and getting the colour on the other.
So,
It took a while to bleed.
I don't know if I mentioned this. I think I mentioned this on a podcast recently, but I tried to blade when I was a teenager because would have been my early 20s because I had no idea that blading was a thing until I came back to wrestling in my early 20s as a student. And then when I found out it was a thing, it was like, how hard could it be? Really hard. Like cutting a razor blade into bits in the first place is fucking difficult. Then actually finding a place to cut yourself when you've never done it before. Mm. So with Omega not having exactly a blade heavy career, you know, it's not going to be like Jericho's bladed a lot.
Yeah,
so it's not
going to
be too
good.
Jericho, a very famous blade job that Jericho did when he was in Smoky Mountain, a company, Jim Cornette, that lasted less time than my company did.
God.
So he had a match when he was in the Thrill Seekers with him and Lance Storm, and I think they were wrestling the Fantastics, I think. And that's the day Jericho talks about it in his autobiography, his first one, where he was trying to do either a 450 or a moonsault, and I think it must have been a 450 because he could do a moonsault. So he was trying to do a 450 in the ring, and he was messing around trying to do it and broke his wrist, but then still had to wrestle that night. But I think he broke his right wrist and he's right-handed.
Okay.
And we've been told to get colour in that match. So he had to blade with the wrong hand.
Oh.
And therefore just slices his head open and bleeds every... It is 1.0 on the Muta scale level. It is Muta, JBL, Eddie Guerrero sort of level of gore. He absolutely fucking knacks himself. It's not like Jericho can't blade. He knows what he's doing. But I tried to blade myself and I couldn't, and it took ages, and eventually I got a tiny trickle of blood because it's not easy to do. But then when you think that someone like Shawn Michaels could be thrown over a top rope, spit a blade into his hand, cut himself, and throw the blade away all whilst he's in midair, that's a special level of skill.
I'm really fuming at Matt. You're on my list.
I'll go back and watch it.
You should.
Next question.
Mike Brooker last year, I slept in for like the first third of Wrestle Kingdom. Like, well, go and watch it if you're going to come and do the podcast.
Yeah. See, some of us are professionals now.
We are. In your unicorn slippers.
Next question about this match from Corona. If Cody and Kenny compete to lead Bullet Club, which members of Bullet Club will be in each person's corner? So who's going to take sides?
Oh my God, it's like your parents breaking up.
Well, it's Kenny in the box, 100%.
They'll never leave him.
They'll never leave him.
Marty also loves Kenny.
Yeah.
Cody will probably inherit Tama Tonga.
I think Cody will have Chase Owens, Takahashi, and then it's down to Fale, Tama.
The OG.
Tonga.
They're kind of drifting off on their own.
That is true. The Samoans are doing it for themselves because they've got the is it Leo as well?
Mm-hmm. Who's massive?
Yeah, he's changed his name apparently in the next tour I saw today. He's changing it to a just one name thing. I'm not too sure. It is.
He's massive and
see, I think they're just it's just going to cease to exist. I think if they. Whatever they do with it, I think Bullet Club's going to be dead.
Side point, has Bullet Club kind of run its course now?
100%.
Yeah. Wow. So, we'd, as wrestling fans, we'd say yes, absolutely yes, because yes, we remember yeah, when yeah, we remember yeah, when Fergal was in it, etc., yeah, etc. Yeah, yeah, yeah. However, look at it from a t-shirt selling Hot Topic
yeah,
point of view.
True,
it's,
true.
To a lot of people, it's a new thing.
True, true.
It, and again, it's that perception of how hardcore a wrestling fan you are.
Yeah.
You know, by the time something, it's that thing like in a band, and by the time they're popular, you don't like them anymore.
Maybe it has evolved, and maybe it is just going to be the elite that break off and do their own thing.
Mm.
But for me, yeah, it's run its course, but again, you know.
But LIJ are the bigger merch sellers, aren't
yeah.
they?
LIJ in Japan, but globally, Bullet Club by a mile.
When I was in America last month, LIJ had run out in Washington, D.C. Hot Topic.
I had the pleasure of going into Hot Topic in Orlando.
It's exciting, isn't it? It never gets old.
Right, I went in Hot Topic. I bought loads of Deftones t-shirts because you can't buy them here. And I went in, and it's quite nice being able to take a picture of Marty's merch and send it to him and go, look at this. I do the same with like comedy mates when they've got a DVD out, but now I can do it with wrestlers I know in their t-shirts.
Marty must get a lot of them and a lot of seats on aeroplane pictures.
Yes, I do that. It's called a Marty skill now. Every flight I went on in 2017, I got full Marty skill.
Good.
Apart from the one I went on with my wife and my son, where they unfortunately took up seats.
Ruined it.
Not unfortunately, wife. I was very happy to have you there. Less so the boy, because let's be honest, he didn't sleep and he slapped a bald man on the head. He did. My wife picked him up. When we were flying to New York, my wife picked him up to walk him down the aisle because he was getting cranky. He didn't have his own seat. He was under 2 years old, so he had a sky cart and he's too big for it. He's a unit, right? So she picked him up. She's carrying him back down the plane. And the guy who sat a few rows behind us just walks past, and the lad just hits him on the top of the head. And the best bit is the bloke turned around, and I think the wife had to pretend she did it to take the bullet. Karaoke Dark says, do we see Omega and Jericho reviving their rivalry in WWE at any time? I don't think Kenny will ever go to WWE.
No, he likes
Japan too much.
My answer is no, and I need a Wii.
Okay. But you don't, I mean, Kenny loves Japan, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Speaks Japanese fairly well, has been there for... Because it's not like he's just come into our consciousness. He was in DDT for ages.
Yeah, he loves the life. He lives over there, doesn't he? He's not Canada.
No, I think he's... Maybe also as well, I think he's one of those... You know, sometimes you see people and they're too much of an independent spirit. Zack Sabre Jr. is another one. You can't ever see ended up in WWE. He likes the travelling life. It's like the Colt Cabana thing that he always talks about. Just that thing of just travelling around and wanting to make as many towns as possible and see the world. And for some people, the travel and the experience of doing all that crazy stuff is more important than the security of having a regular job.
Yeah.
You know? And
the excitement.
You know, I'm someone I'd kill to be able to just say I'd got a consistent full-time job out of wrestling, because I'm nearly 40 and I've got two children. But I think for wrestlers it's very different, and I can't. I mean, I know a lot of people have tried to go, oh, Jericho will be it, and then they're looking at Fozzy's tour schedule and going, I've been doing that. He's got a show on WrestleMania Day, and he's got a show on Royal Rumble Day, and he's, you know, it's...
But he hasn't got a show on the Los Angeles Evolved show day. I've checked.
Has he not?
No.
I like that you've checked.
We'll get to that.
Okay, good.
Hint Naito. It's mad, though. This time last year, a lot of people were convinced Kenny was going to be in the Rumble, weren't they?
Yeah. Also, like... Whilst, again, us as hardcore wrestling fans appreciate how great he is, would that translate into being on Raw or SmackDown? Not necessarily.
No.
In NXT, 100%.
Yeah.
He'd absolutely nail it. But would you, and again, it might not. Like, no one expected Daniel Bryan to become the success that he became. We all, as the fans that we are, we all wanted him to. The same as we all wanted Samoa Joe to. But there's no guarantee that people will catch on in the way that we think they will, because our form of fandom is very different to mainstream fandom.
But then if WWE also is cease and desisting his mates at every turn, he's probably not going to want to jump ship.
Yeah. See, I have an opinion on the whole cease and desist thing, in that I think if they hadn't have took the piss as much as they took the piss, they never would have done it.
No.
If they hadn't have rocked up, to a couple of miles away from a Raw and done it, no one ever would have given a shit. And, you know, Because they've been doing it for years. It's not like no one knew they were doing it. It's only when they pushed it too far, which is, you know, whenever you've got a gag that works, eventually someone will push it too far. So, right then, to the main event. A singles match for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship as Kazuchika Okada defended his title successfully against Tetsuya Naito. And the internet went a bit mad. So a lot of people were very unhappy that Naito didn't win. Now, Naito's obviously had a good year. He is arguably the most over person in New Japan at the minute. This was his big chance, and he didn't win. Now, it's interesting to see, in particular, Western wrestling fans losing their minds and getting really annoyed. I read a review on one moderately prominent review website where the reviewer was giving the matches star ratings and gave the main event a dud, which is not, because Naito didn't win.
Wow.
Which is absolutely ridiculous. So here's the thing. I'm a Leicester supporter, right? I've been to watch Leicester play games that have been fantastic games of football and we've lost. And I've come away and I've been sad that we've lost, but I've still enjoyed the game.
Yeah.
Right? And that's how I view this. Yeah. From my point of view, I like both of them. I didn't care who won. I just wanted it to be a good match.
Yeah.
Was it as good a match as Omega and Okada from last year?
No.
Don't think so. And the unfortunate thing is, because that match was so good and all of the stuff that Okada and Omega did during 2017 was so good, that's what it's always going to be judged upon all the time. And even if this, I don't know, I've not seen Meltzer's ratings yet because the Observer's not out yet for this week. And I'm curious to see what he gives it, because he's not going to give it six. He's not going to give it 6.25. But he might give it 5. But I don't know if it is a 5-star match. For this reason. It's a 36-minute long match. And I think the match between Okada and Omega last year was 40-odd minutes. Maybe 44. And that match last year felt they went at it full force for that entire 40 minutes. With this, again, it felt like they knew they were going for 36 minutes. So, and again, this match is still wonderful. But it felt like, now we're going for 36 minutes, so we need to start slowly and build. Which is fine, it's the New Japan main event style. But when you compare it to last year that didn't really feel that way, it doesn't feel as entertaining to me. Because now, there is a Okada main event style that is building to this and building and building and building and building and building. I don't know if we're all maybe a little bit tired. I think it's great, but I don't know if fans are maybe a little bit tired of it now, and that's why there's a negative reaction to this match. This match, which is, like, you can't watch this match and go, it's a bad match. It's not. It's a wonderful match. But it's not. First of all, there's the disappointment of people wanting to see Naito win, and this being Naito's big moment. And then there's the comparison to last year's match. So I don't know whether any of that stuff muddied this match for you.
So my opinion on this is, I do agree that it wasn't as good as Okada or Omega as a match. But I thought what this match did incredibly well was play on the conventions of New Japan main events, and more specifically Okada matches. There was so much in this match for me, because I really am invested in Okada and Naito, that I loved. So one of the first things I noticed was Okada doing the Rainmaker taunt quite early on, but not hitting the dropkick. And the minute the match changed was when he hit the dropkick. And that to me was like a lovely little touch on the convention of, because we're programmed. As soon as he hits the dropkick, does the taunt, we're like, here we go, finishing stretch, strap in. I thought that was great. I thought the little bits where they got the shot of Naito holding Okada's wrist again was a really nice little hark back to pretty much every single Okada match he's ever had. But the thing that I thought this match did brilliant was it presented Naito in a way of, this is a man that deserves to be here this time. This is a man that's learned all his lessons from last time. and learn to be himself, and himself works. But the reason he lost this match is because he doesn't fully believe in himself. It wasn't that he got too cocky. It was because he, in his head, still doesn't think he can beat Okada. So when he hit that first Destino, it was enough. But to him, he's like, no, I have to prove beyond reasonable doubt that I am the absolute best in this company. And it was present in the storytelling of him being ferociously obsessed with hitting the Stardust Press, and the fact that he didn't believe that he could pin Okada, and then Okada, it takes one Rainmaker, bam, and he's done. And that, to me, I cared more about this match because I've been fortunate enough to care more about them two in a big long period, especially Naito, because I think he's incredibly fascinating in terms of someone that choked horrendously to then go from being a legitimate outcast to then making that his gimmick and then coming back and being the man he is. So for me personally, because I've been on this journey with them, I really loved the storytelling in this match. Like, I really, really did. And just the bits where, like, Naito was just beating the piss out of him, because it's like, you would. This is the man that took everything away from him. He's taken the title away from him. He's taken his spot away from him. He was meant to be the next guy, and there is this guy standing across the ring from him that took everything away. And on the other side of that, you've got Okada, who is starting to believe who he is, like, fully. Like, I think this is the most important title defense Okada's ever had. So I think this is the match that solidifies him as the man. Like, because we're at a position now where, and I know where the questions are going, it's like, who's going to beat him?
Mm.
And I love that. That's why I love this match. I'm like,
I think it's interesting. Chris said he felt he was anticlimactic with Naito not winning, but this is the thing about wrestling. And this is the thing I've noticed as a promoter, is like, when people get annoyed at the result of a match in a form of entertainment that is scripted.
Mm.
So, like, I've never seen people get... I suppose the most recent Star Wars film is probably the best example I've got of people I can come up with of people going, I hate that. I hated it and I want it to be changed. But with wrestling, it's one of very few art forms. Like, no one watches a soap opera and gets annoyed at the cliffhanger at the end of an episode of EastEnders.
Okay.
But do you know what I mean? It's like, wrestling's this thing where people going, well, it was his time, he deserved it. Well, you don't know what New Japan have planned.
Mm.
This could well be the main event next year.
Yeah.
So, and I do feel that New Japan do long-term booking better. But again, as a promoter, it's something that whenever fans get annoyed at a result on a progress show, like, sometimes I just want to go, you wait until you see what's happening in three shows time and this will make sense. But you can't always say that. But Chris says that he felt the match was amazing but was just missing something. Do we think it was missing anything? I mean, I would have liked to have seen Naito win, but exactly the reasons that you've just spelled out, there's absolutely nothing wrong with this match. It's not... The thing I think was missing, it could have done with a little bit more intensity earlier on in the match.
Yeah, I probably agree with that.
The one thing it's missing for me. But apart from that, the story that they're telling is still compelling, even if it doesn't mean that we've got a big go-home. Yeah, it's not WrestleMania where the babyface has to win. That's not how it works. Mm. Japan's very different.
And it's that discussion again of who is the babyface, or who is the guy that we all want to win. And it's like, yes, Naito is super popular, but he's super popular with a proportion of that audience, and it's a young, anti-authority proportion of that fan base that do want to defy convention. And that's wicked. That's because he doesn't become a villain, he becomes an anti-hero.
Yeah,
but you've got to remember that at the same time, though, it's like, Okada is absolutely money. You know, excuse the pun, but he's everything that company needs.
Also, Okada's younger than Naito, right?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, and I think it's wicked of you get to pick who your guy is. Like, that's super cool, and you have legitimate reasons to, you know, because again, they both do. Like, Okada's a dick
Watch him. He's not full Hogan dick, but he is a dick. He does dickish things.
He has that can't be off look on his face.
But then that's part of that story is in the past when Okada's choked, it's because he's too cocky. He's overconfident in himself. And the story of Okada is he's finally become the perfect combination of confidence and ability. And so I just think it's, again, like I can understand why some people, and it's not like, oh, I'm absolutely right, I'm 100% right. You're allowed to disagree, because that's what I got from that match. And I genuinely believe whatever you got from that match, in the same way that I'm sure there's people that watch this show and absolutely adored Kenny and Jericho, and I completely understand it. It wasn't so much for me, that match, because I wasn't as invested in that match. But that's not to say that one match is better than the other. I genuinely think the beauty of the show, all 25 hours of it, 92 matches, yeah, is there's going to be something for you here. And I think I think wrestling could be quite fickle, especially when it comes to New Japan, because everyone's like, oh, New Japan's wrestling banging.
Fickle?
It's banging. It's an amazing show. For a long time, Wrestle Kingdom used to be absolute dog shit until the final four matches. You had to sit through the first load of stuff. And like, again, there's probably people that disagree with me, and you're allowed to, but I used to never watch Wrestle Kingdom live, because I was like, ugh, I'm going to have to sit through like five matches that I don't care about until the good stuff comes along. And then when they used to have the breaks in between as well, I was like, oh, just end me. Like, when is this going to end? And I think this is the first time, as well as last year, because I thought last year nailed it as well, but this year was really good top to bottom, and I think that should be praised. And I think, again, it's that thing of there's 10 matches, you're going to find more than one match that you absolutely loved on that show.
A couple of more questions. Sam Taylor says, where does Okada's current IWGP heavyweight title reign rank next to other great title reigns, not just in Japan? People like CM Punk's long WWE title reign. How do we think it ranks in terms of all time title reigns? Is it up there with the best of them?
Well, it's pretty bloody amazing, but it's very hard to compare to CM Punk, because he was defending on TV a lot. When you think of all the amount of times that Okada actually defends,
well, because Okada, I think,
isn't that much.
Dave Meltzer put something in the Observer about how often WWE wrestlers wrestled in 2017 and how often New Japan guys wrestle. And I think someone like Dean Ambrose, I think, was the guy who wrestled most for WWE. I could be wrong on that. Someone would probably correct me. But he wrestled like 215 times or something like that. Which is tons.
Yeah,
is a really massive amount. And then Okada wrestled something like 120 times.
Yeah,
and out of those 120 times, only 15 were singles matches.
Yeah,
So it's no wonder he can do these 30-40 minute matches every now and again, because he's saved it. The style was rough. No, wrong, but you're not doing it.
Yeah,
there's indie workers in this country who are more banged up than New Japan guys because of all the midweek shows and stuff now.
I think it's up there though. Like, in terms of, again, like if you think back at the heydays of like the 90s and All Japan, that Triple Crown used to bounce around quite a lot.
Yeah.
A title run off the top of my head was Kobashi with the GHC heavyweight title in Noah.
Mm.
Like, he had a hell of a run with that title. But in terms of delivering in title matches, he is in that top three, definitely. Consistently being that good is to be applauded.
Raf was the first person to ask, amongst about a dozen people, who is the one to eventually dethrone Okada? Just a name.
Kenny.
Naito.
Ibushi.
Ooh, nice. Ooh.
Find out his contract then, don't you?
If they can stop him from riding bicycles into people.
I love...
Put the fireworks down.
I love there's a wonderful spirit of a child within Kota Ibushi, isn't
he? He is the greatest independent wrestler in the world, because he doesn't give a shit. He is mental and loves it, because he's got the world at his beautiful feet.
I imagine.
And he just goes, nah, I want to dick about in an apartment blocks in Japan because it's a laugh, in it. And it's like, he's fucking amazing for it. That's why we love Ibushi.
I imagine.
That is why we love him.
I imagine he was a nightmare when he was in the Cruiserweight Classic.
Oh.
Just WWE going, look, we like having fun, mate, but put the fireworks down.
Stop setting everyone on fire.
He's the Mario Balotelli of professional wrestling. Not just fireworks.
But
you imagine he would go, if he was a millionaire, you imagine he would go to a petrol station and pay for everyone's
food. Oh, yeah, yeah. But that's honestly why we love him, though, because he is just crazy. And to be fair, though, on a serious note, if his ex can settle down into a steady job and have a steady career in the form of Kenny Omega, then maybe Ibushi can. We can always hope for it.
Yeah. Final question, most important question about this match. What are our thoughts on Okada's trousers? Lovely fringe in, I thought.
Lovely.
But, I mean, I'm sure Trent Seven had the same opinion as me. I don't like a boot fit.
No, I agree. It took me ages to work out what was written on his ass.
And what was written on
his
arse?
It was K-O-R-M, so Kushida Okada, Rainmaker. And it just took me ages, because I thought...
Korn?
Yeah, I was like,
he's misspelled Korn, his favourite new metal band.
At first, because of the text, I thought it was like, you know, the old King of the Ring text.
Yeah.
And so I was like, what's he doing here? Personally, I thought they were cracking entrance trousers, and he was going to rip them off in a sexy male stripper manner. Not for me. Not for me.
The third attempt of the Rainmaker.
Oh my god! Straight to hard cam. Bam. Not for me.
No,
I don't really like them. I think people have reacted a little, saying that they couldn't concentrate on the match because of them, like, chill out.
I mean, they were straight from Elton John's wardrobe.
Yeah.
Like, Elton John / Liberace's trousers.
Yeah. I like to think that he was going to take them off. But then saw how long Naito was taking to take his suit off, and he went, "Oh yeah, you little prick! All right, I'll keep these on."
Saturday Night Naito,
yeah,
as I like to call him.
I always call him Naito Fever. Have we been through this?
Might have been. I would have loved it if he'd have come out to.
Yes, we have.
If he'd come out to Staying Alive,
that's the dream.
Oh, would have been so good.
Nice, just evil
and recreating the bit from Airplane where he throws the coat and it gets thrown back at him. Oh, fucking belly. Some general questions now, related a little bit to that one. It's from Victoria Burchett. Says, who had the best ring gear? Who had the best ring gear during the course of the show?
Best entrance gear has to be Marty, hands down. That was cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Best ring gear.
I mean, Cody and Brandy put the effort in.
They did. I agree.
Yeah, they did. Although I did feel a little bit like Cody's tights accentuated the codpiece area a little bit too much.
Yes, I can understand that.
Yeah.
I enjoyed William and his
purple.
Lovely purple trunks. I think, as a complete package, everything together, Hiroshi Tanahashi, you can't go wrong. He put his weave in. He did his hair proper. He had a nice jacket and a lovely pair of...
My wife worries a lot about the condition of a lot of the guys' hair.
Because
there's a lot of dye gone in.
Yeah.
You know...
Well, you look at Naito, he's got quite strawy...
Nice, very straw-like. I
mean, but then Tanahashi, what?
He only had a perm last week.
Luscious.
When his perm, I was like, what the fuck happened?
Did you not see the pictures going around of him and his
dog? A sexy cauliflower.
Like him and his dog.
Oh,
and like,
the dog.
They were saying that, like... They reckon he did it to match his dog.
It's weird, isn't it? If you saw Tanahashi from the back, he could be a hairdresser from Liverpool.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it amazing that we are talking about this wrestling company that has built a legacy on guys that are hard as nails and being legitimately tough, and we are sat here talking about a man's hairpiece?
But he has the hairdo of your, like... chavvy enemies at school when you're year 8.
He does.
Just little plaits on the side.
I mentioned a bit earlier, but I like Toriano's ring gear.
Yeah.
Just because of the sexy Elvis skulls on them.
I
thought Roppongi 3K looked pretty rad.
They look cool.
Very good shiny stuff.
Entrance was real good.
And I like the fact that Suzuki Gun all wear black. Like, I'm just a big fan of that.
Always a shout out to Bushi as well.
Bushi's
only in the Rumble, but he's looking cracking.
Craig Palmer says, what was our favourite move of the night? I'll give you mine first. It was Takahashi doing his sunset flip power bombs to everybody, including putting Marty's head through a guy.
Oh, yeah, that was... Oh, bless you, Marty.
That was mine. What was your favourite move?
Go on, Mel.
probably contradicting myself now, but Crossroads.
Crossroads off the apron.
That's pretty bloody spectacular.
Yeah, I'm thinking Crossroads. Usually it'd be Takahashi doing insane.
I mean, Suzuki's dropkick was beautiful. Shout out to Okada's Rainmaker that won.
Oh yeah,
on the main event. He laid that in, shall we say. And what's the name of Goto's finisher? I always like watching that.
GTR?
Yes.
Yeah.
So
not the Yuri Garoshi.
I thought,
who everyone loves calling on WWE.
Yuri Garoshi.
They love it. Like, Michael Cole's been going nuts with it. It's wicked.
AJ says, what elements of New Japan do we enjoy the most? It doesn't mean comparing it to other companies, but just in terms of, is anything in terms of the style or the presentation, etc., that we particularly enjoy about it? I like an isometric camera angle.
Nice.
I like it when we're in the corner instead of in. I love that.
Yeah.
It's a very Japanese thing.
Do you know what? Actually, I really love it when they get the shots that are iconic. Mm. I've spoke about it a lot, but one of my favourite memories. I actually enjoyed the shot more than the match, but it was when Prince Devitt challenged Okada, and he. Okada does the Rainmaker talk and Devitt does the god on his chest and Okada looks down at it. I was like, oh, that's boss. And Shibata used to be a king as well for bleeding and finding the camera. But yeah, so I think it's their presentation of like a moment that you go, ooh, it's going to look good in a highlight package.
Anything from you, Mel?
I think it's just probably their legitimate backgrounds, like most of the roster. Like, you know, they are just hard men and they're going to bring it. That's not to say, like you say, you shouldn't compare it to other companies, but it's just seems more real.
It just must be really weird for Gaijin going over there and like not that Will and Marty aren't like tough guys because they can take a kicking, but at the same time, you know, as far as I'm aware, neither of them are martial artists, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's someone like Zack Sabre does have that sort of background, but it must be quite a culture shock the first time you go there and presumably getting a bit of a hiding, you know?
But don't piss anyone off.
Yeah, definitely don't piss anyone off. Mick Cooper says, who did we become a fan of during Wrestle Kingdom? Not someone we already love, but more someone who won us over. I'd say, I think I kind of brought this up before, I think Cody kind of did that for me a little bit because I appreciated him more than I did this time last year. Mm. So he certainly was one for me. Just, I'm going to flick back through. And again, Roppongi 3K, who I'd not really seen much of.
Those guys.
Definitely.
Yeah. In the interest of fairness, I won't go for them then. But
anyone else?
Chris Jericho.
Really? That up-and-coming youngster?
Because purely for the thing of my expectations weren't low, but they were lower, and ew, fantastic, absolutely fantastic. Both him and Omega, but yeah, Jericho for me.
And final question from Gerbowen says, what main events Wrestle Kingdom 13?
Pete Dunne versus the Great Muta.
Be serious. What main event's Wrestle Kingdom 13?
It's so hard. It's so hard. Because it's that thing of like, you kind of want to pick the match you want versus the match that you think's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So the match I think's going to happen is Okada versus Naito. I do think that's going to be the main event again. The match I kind of probably would like to see is Ibushi versus Okada.
Okay.
I'm just wondering whether they can stretch out Kenny Okada again for another year.
I think the importance of Okada as the US champion to break into that market will mean they probably won't.
Mm.
But yeah, this is your viewpoint, not
Okada's
mine.
Okada's won.
Yeah.
They had the draw, and then Kenny beat him in the G1.
Yeah, and they're probably going to face off in a G1 at some point, or a New Japan Cup. Probably.
I'm going to go Kenny Okada again.
Okay. So, G1 this year.
Yes.
Every single match in New Japan has a time limit, right?
Yes. Yeah. 60 minutes?
Yep.
Yeah.
Because even the no disqualification match had a time limit on, which is a weird thing if you think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, the final of the G1 this year will be Naito and Ibushi, which will go to a draw, and we will have a three-way match for the first time in New Japan history.
It's very controversial.
In the main event of Wrestle Kingdom, which will be Okada versus Ibushi versus Naito, which Okada will win and retain because he's losing that title for another 2 years.
Is this a
insider knowledge, mate? It's not.
Is this Pip making Jinder Mahal champion level?
No.
Okay.
If that happens, I mean, fucking hell, buy me a biscuit, right? I think that they've seen that they can, because they before it was we're never having gimmick matches on Wrestle Kingdom. Well, they have now.
Yeah.
So let's see.
Yeah.
Like, I could see that happening because it would be such a huge selling point because they've never done a multi-man main event.
Yeah. Sure.
I think it could happen. Right, that's Wrestle Kingdom. Oh, we've managed to do it in 2 hours and 27 minutes. Although 27 minutes of that was us talking about AstroTurf. So let's plug some things. Mal, do tell people where you are on Twitter and anything you would like to plug. Do now.
I am on Twitter at MelaniePrice01 and also Instagram with this exact same handle.
Marvellous.
Give me a follow, team.
Good. Anything else you need to plug? Do you need any money to buy AstroTurf?
not laying a new garden at the moment. No, I'm good, I'm good.
Good. Matthew Taylor Richard.
Yes, hello. I'm at M Richards Host on Twitter. Follow me on there. I'm available this year, actually. I'm going to try and branch out and do some more stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like
so,
decorating.
I mean, he needs it, doesn't it?
Woman, does it pay cash?
Yeah. That's, yeah, exactly. Screwfix, give me a call. I could do a root good Yorkshire accent. Hello. Follow me on Twitter if you need someone to talk about stuff, whether over wrestling matches, before wrestling matches, or about video games. Let me know. Also, big shout out to Progress On Demand. Because I realised that the Bruiser Brody documentary from High Spots is on it. So I got to watch that yesterday. So go and check out all the content on there.
Yeah.
Because it's not just Progress.
I am, as always, at Jim Smallman on Twitter, on Instagram, Jim Smallman Comedian on Facebook, and jimsmallman.com/TNJ to point people at this podcast. ProgressWrestling.com for tickets and merch for Progress, demand-progress.com for all of our shows, and loads of other shows from other cool companies, like loads of companies in Australia and places like that, and loads of cool companies in America who we sort of share content with. So go and check all that stuff out. We've got a show on Sunday in Birmingham, sold out, you can't come, soz, unless you are coming, then see you there. Yeah, obviously check out everything on the Distraction Pieces Network, because it's all gravy, as I believe the children say. Do children talk about gravy? I don't know.
No, it's Christine Milian and Romeo Dunn, but you know.
Big pop.
Niche references, guys. Anyway, say bye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.